Blog Talk Radio.
Stars all the way from here. Can't you see?
Brother Sharif, Brother Sharif, Brother Sharif, and Thor Ministry Thor. Radio. Radio. Brother Sharif and Thor Ministry Thor. Radio. Radio. Radio.
Dig, dig, dig this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go again. How low can you go?
How y'all feel out there?
I know you're gonna dig this.
Okay,
party people in the house.
Yeah, boy.
Are you ready for more with Thor Radio? Are you being harassed by debt collectors? Are you facing foreclosure?
Okay.
We'll bring the hammer down on your debt by using Thor strategies and tactics.
Okay.
Brother Sharif and Thor will educate you on the consumer protection laws, which will allow you to hammer away your debt. Get ready, reset, and restore with Thor Radio. Thor Ministry Radio. Now, here is our own Brother Sharif.
Peace, blessings, welcome. The Thor Ministry Radio Network, a.k.a. Thor Ministry, the House of Restoration Ministry, a.k.a. Truth Radio. Today is June the 2nd, 2014. Above all, I like to give all praises and honor to the High, Most High, for allowing us to come together again today to congregate as community for a common unity purpose. I want to thank him for allowing you to tune in once again today on this great sunny day in the heart of the summer, June 2nd, 2014. We are live. Welcome to our Monday show. It is our will and intent to have 5 days of Thor Radio Network based on different topics, and our new host will be starting within the next week or two. So please stay tuned with Thor. Always check our blog talk to see when the shows will be scheduled, but we will attempt to do a Monday through Friday show. And on a Saturday, we're going to have a music show that will last several hours during the day, giving you a variety of different music. So we are trying to make, we will make Thor a very entertaining network, sort of like a Walmart of different information, and also have some music that will appeal to a diversity of groups. And we're going to fulfill our goal in providing you entertainment and edutainment. I want to give a warm thanks to my panel that is here, Sister Lori, Sister Layla, who are in the queue. Our mother Rudy is in the background having a minor attack of allergies, but nonetheless, she's, her presence is here. She's in the house. Got a lot of people in the house. We want to thank you for being here this morning. And we're going to talk about some topics, of course, the centerpiece of which is debt, debt collection, alleged foreclosures, and any other economic topic that the listeners and supporters want to hear. First of all, Thor definitely wants to thank all of our supporters out there, all of your emails, all of your prayers, and all of your many thanks that I get, I want to publicly say that I appreciate each and every last one of them, and I do respond to all of them, and for those that I have not, I publicly thank you for your support. Thank you for being here with us, and I'm glad that Thor is having some sort of an impact in your life, or at least your commercial life. Let me open up my lines for my co-hosts, Layla and Lori. Y'all can chime in and speak and tell us if there's anything on your mind you like me to discuss before I just go where I go.
Well, greetings to our family. All at once. Okay. Greetings to our family. This is Layla. It's my humble honor to be here sharing with you today. As Brother Sharif said, you know, we're aiming to bring Thor to everyone's household that has an ear to listen and modify their lives accordingly. So we're here to talk about what you want to talk about. But before we move forward, I would like to give Thor's disclaimer that everything that we discuss on the Thor Radio Network is for information purposes and is not to be considered legal advice. There are no attorneys, bar members, or any other private legal group associated with this show. Listeners are informed to thoroughly research the information provided on the show prior to taking action.
All right.
Hola, hola. Calling in from Costa Rica. How are you guys today?
That is Lori, one of our hosts.
That is.
And Lori said, holla, holla.
Holla, holla. I'm trying
All
to
right.
get moving. Yes. You know, I would
All
just
right.
like to give honors to the beautiful Maya Angelou's where I'm at today.
Indeed.
We lost her last week, and I just want to give praise for that beautiful spirit gracing all of our lives and touching all the many people she did throughout her journey. And
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody give thanks for that. And
indeed.
Let's carry on.
Indeed, definitely. That is a well-deserved blessing out to the sister, Maya Angelou, who was a pioneer and an icon to and for our country, and a great loss, but she's left behind a legacy. A memorandum of her life is written in many powerful words. So we definitely will miss her. But I'll say that the important thing in life I've learned is to leave a legacy. Leave a, what some may call a peanut trail, or memorialize your journey, your information, your path, your experiences, memorialize them in some written form or form such as this, where people have an archive to be able to experience your walk in this commercial world. Experience your successes and your failures. This is why this forum and others are so paramount to getting the information out. And I know had the sister Maya Angelou had this type of a platform, Blog Talk and all those other platforms, then, you know, she would have been a lot further advanced in projecting her words, her poems, her position in life. So nonetheless, she will be missed. I have the father in here. I'm going to go to him in a minute.
Brother Sharif, can I just share with everyone just two quotes that I've always loved that she had put out there? Just real quick.
Sure.
One of them, you know, she says that she learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And I just think that's just a beautiful, powerful statement. And it makes me think of whenever I, you know, tell people hand out smiles, they're free, and they give back, you know. It's amazing how when someone smiles at you, just that the energy that penetrates straight to you, no matter how you're feeling, whenever you see someone doing that, whether it's a stranger in passing or someone that you love, it changes everything. And then the other thing that I think was very impactful that she said, my mother said, I must always be intolerant of ignorance, but understanding of illiteracy, that some people unable to go to school were more educated and more intelligent than a college professor. And that speaks volumes.
Wow.
To the power
indeed
that we all have. That's it.
That's right. Beautiful, beautiful. I love those words. I love them. Those cliches, so to speak. Definitely, we want to extend to you the opportunity to, if you have questions today, we'll be taking those early, 657-383-0332, 657-383-0332, press star 1. Or if you're already in queue, you can just press star 1 if you have a question. And the question can be pertaining to debt or any other relevant question that you may need some guidance or opinions or answers on, or one of us on the panel to share our personal experiences with you that may help you toward a directional path to some relief or remedy regarding your situation. I'm going to open up the line 772-8574, the father of Thor Radio. Peace and blessings to you. We appreciate you being here. How are you doing today?
Shalom, shalom, shalom.
Shalom. I'm sorry, mother. I didn't mean father. I meant the mother. Golly.
Shalom. That's okay. You know, father, mother, be one.
That's right. How has your week been, mother? Anything you want to share with us? What's been going on?
Yeah, I had a beautiful strong end. I call it a strong end because weak seems like you're diminishing. So I had a strong end this, time. And everything is beautiful. Florida weather is beautiful. Basically, it's always summer in Florida. And I'm enjoying the weather. And in reference to Maya Angelou, since I heard one of the hosts speaking of her, the scripture says there's an appointed time for everything that we do. And when you complete your time on this earth and then you go to spirit with the Creator, everything is well with her. You know, and that's the way we have to live our lives, knowing that we've done exactly what the Creator wanted us to do, the plans that He had for us, we walked in it, and when everything is completed that He wanted us to do on this earthly realm, we're happy. I mean, you know, there's no loss, it's only gain. And that's with everything we do, even with debt collectors. And with things that happen like that, if we follow the right path and we do exactly what's laid out and we follow the truth that we're given, I mean, everything will be just, you know, beautiful for us. That's what we're all about at Thor, restoring, and that's what happens. When you complete everything, the process, and go through the process, and you do it in the order that it has to be done, then you'll be restored, and as in the physical, also in the spiritual.
Indeed. Powerful, powerful. The mother always bringing forth words of wisdom and knowledge and of extreme power, and definitely
yes.
We
yes.
thank you for being here and supporting your son to
yes.
continue
yes. These three.
Staying
and
out
see-
in the farm, in the Babylonian farm, planting seeds.
Yes. And see, what we have to do is just seek it. If we seek it, we'll find it. It's like looking for something lost. If you really seek for it, you'll find it. And that's what happened when we seek truth. It applies to every area of our life. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Indeed.
And shalom to all the co-hosts also. Shalom, shalom. Yes.
Indeed.
Shalom.
Indeed.
It's blessings to you, Mother. I love you. I when I hear you speak, it just brings a smile across my face and glee in my heart when I hear you speak. And you speak such wisdom and power.
Yes, it all comes from the Creator.
That's
is what
right.
He says. He says, you open your mouth, and if you're working for Him, He'll speak through you.
Yes.
That's right.
And that's what we like. That's what we accept. Nothing else. Nothing else. That's what we accept.
Indeed.
Yes.
Well, that is what my journey was here to Thor. You know, I believe myself to be a seeker of the truth. I'm not perfect. I don't profess to be perfect. Huh. And I, you know, aim to do the right thing in everything that I do. And, you know, when you talk about that vision, I mean, arriving here at Thor, to me, the matter is already taken care of. I mean, I'm here. My mind says the matter is taken care of, so I now can see into the future, and I have vision for where my life is going to be, and I'm comforted in that. Everything else that I'm going to have to go through on my pathway to get the resolve with these debt collectors, is a part of that process, but in my mind, it's already done. And I think that when people are going through this process, they don't realize, I mean, they get caught up in the mayhem of it all, but it's the settling of the mind, the peace of the mind that passes all understanding is what's the crux of the matter to be able to conquer anything that comes beneath our foot.
Yeah.
And that's the power, I think that's the mission, the passion, the drive of Thor, to get people to that point.
Yes, right. Yes. That'd be true. That'd be the truth, because everything is already completed. All we have to do is walk on the path, and so we don't have any worries or concerns. We just forge forward. We forge forward with Thor.
That's right.
You know, and it's like a minefield to some degree. You know, you get the. You know, I've never been in the military. You know, but I have people that I know that have been in the military and. You know, and I hear the stories, but, you know, I envision like a minefield. You know, they might be throwing a pot shot here or there might be some artillery, you know, some mission coming at me. However, I just have to learn how to maneuver and get around all of the entrapments that they put out there to get me across to my base, if you will.
Yes.
And that's how I see this journey that we're going through when we're dealing with the debt collectors.
Yes. Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Indeed. All right, let's get into some news and what's going on out here in the commercial debt world. We are sure that's why most of you have tuned in, if not just for supportive purposes, but to kind of get some direction and information as to what's going on out there. Again, the call-in number, if you have a question today, is 657-383-0332. As a matter of fact, let me go to call-in and get this one question in here. 610-1094, you on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Greetings, Brother Sharif. How are you doing today?
Greeting. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I just had generally just wanted to thank you for everything that you do, and I have a lot of your seminars, your webinars, and I've had a lot of success helping friends and family remove negative inquiries on their credit report. And I just had a question about one of them. And also, I just wanted to say that, you know, just sending them letters and disputing online, you know, I've been getting some letters back. A lot of them haven't actually responded. But not yet, but for the one letter they responded, they said that they received a dispute letter and we have contacted our client, who is another debt collector. So I thought that was pretty funny. what would a response be, a proper response? I mean, obviously, I mean, in the letter it says, you know, services provided by you, not by someone else, you know.
That's right. Well, I can answer that question for you. First of all, we definitely thank you for your compliments, that you're having some success with the information you've been receiving. And that's one of our goals, is to provide people with a route that they can gain some immediate success, relief, remedy, whatever you want to call it. We can't stay on topics and subjects and things such as religion and race and all these other things while we're suffering and sinking economically. So we have to focus on things that people can really get some success doing. And that economic lane that Thor is on is definitely going to help you do that. So I'm glad you've had some success. And any dollar that you're able to keep in your pocket and put in your pocket is definitely the path that we want you on. In terms of sending out notices of dispute, you know, you have to read them carefully. Many times they're conflicting, they're confusing, they don't really answer your question. And if you've done it a few times, you will be able to discover that pretty quickly. They don't know what to say. And many times they say the wrong thing. And I'll just tell you this, most of the time they're going to say the wrong thing. Now, right. You received a notice from a debt collector, you send out a notice of dispute, and they send you a letter, and they create this third, fourth party boogeyman and say, oh, we're working for someone else, but then on the letter they have, you can pay by MasterCard, Visa, and pay us, okay, check, money order. They tell you to pay them, and they're your debt collector. You look on your credit report, you'll see that it's charged off, sold to a third party, or something of the sort. You know most of the time, not every time now, if they have it, they've probably made a purchase of the alleged debt. So when they send you a letter and saying that the boogeyman creditor or their boss, and their boss could be their parent company, because all of these debt collectors have subsidiaries, meaning that you got the head mother debt collectorship, and you may have some other fighter jets, which are these subsidiary companies that go out and, you know, oppress the people with the debt, make the threats. You know, they're the front line. They take the bullets and cover for the mothership. So they're probably saying they have to go back to their creditor, which is the mothership, the parent company of the debt collectors. And I'm telling you, when you start getting the litigation, you start to realize who the parent companies, who the motherships are behind these debt collectors, and you'll be quite surprised. But at any rate, when you send a notice of dispute, they have no specific time. Continue to answer. If you dispute your debt and they stop collecting, meaning that they just throw the file underneath the table and never bother you again, then it's not a violation. Okay? If they continue to try to collect after you sent them a notice of dispute pursuant to 1692G, then that is a violation for them to attempt to try to collect prior to verifying or validating that alleged debt. All right? So those notices are warning, is what some may call conditions precedent. It's what some in military arenas may call a warning shot. Okay, it's some in the legal field that may call it a tort letter. All right, it's a warning to say that I dispute what you're saying. I need you to provide me with proof that what you say is actually true, and I'm legally obligated to pay you So if you receive that letter, let me. Are you back in? 1094?
I'm back. I'm back. Okay. I don't know what happened.
Okay. If you receive that letter and you shoot a notice of dispute back and you don't hear from them, then, you know, then they might have decided to go away and leave you alone.
Okay.
And never to bother you again, and that's fine.
I'm kinda thinking more along because they did pull they did a FCRA violation, you know, because they didn't have any impermissible purpose, so they're on.
They pulled your credit as well?
My friend, yes, this person it is, yes.
All right, well, I mean, they didn't have a permissible purpose, then you need to go ahead and, it sounds like you already know what to do, go ahead and send them the same type of a letter. You know, what I would do is combine both letters into one and say, you know, pursuant to the FDCPA 15 U.S.C. 1692, I dispute the alleged debt and request and demand and or validation or verification of the debt, then going to your FCRA violation and permissible purpose and ask them to respond accordingly and provide a signed consent document where I allowed you to obtain my personal consumer credit file.
Right.
And if not, then, you know, try to offer some sort of a settlement prior to litigation or possible litigation. Okay? Never make a threat. Just tell them what is possible that I might just take you to court on that violation. Many times, at least in my experience, they settle those. And if they did three impermissible credit pulls, then they'll do one or two things. They'll either send you the money on them that you requested, or they'll send the file over to the legal department or attorney, and they will attempt to negotiate with you to see how much you'll settle for, lower than the amount demanded from them. All
right? Right, yeah, of course. Yeah, well, one of them got removed off of, like, Equifax, like, immediately, like, the next day. It was already removed, but they're still on TransUnion.
Equifax is the quickest to take off for these debt collectors. TransUnion and Experian takes a little bit more time. Experian, to me, is the most difficult. TransUnion is second. Equifax is the best for getting things removed quicker for some reason. So, you know, just make sure you dispute them on all three.
Yep,
you know, that's one of the things that many forget to do is dispute them. They think when they dispute on one, it's for all of them. Make sure you dispute on all three just to be safe and then go from there. But always dispute them online first. Do not communicate via email. You can dispute and send out a notice of dispute simultaneously.
Yep.
You can do that. That way you're catching them on both ends. And it's good to, while you're doing that, when you communicate with them, use your state consumer protection law as well. So you're hitting them with three different laws that apply to their conduct. And you're saying, if you do not do X, Y, and Z, again, if you have a question, 657-383-0332. Call in if you have a question. Press star 1. All right. I want to go on to some news here that everyone may have an interest in. Reading an article about debt collectors and how the debt collectors has found a way to garnish your wages, seize your wages, your savings, your bank account, put liens on your property if you have any existing in your name. Okay? I'll read some of the article, and it says, people with overdue bills have long complained of harassment from debt collectors. From late phone calls to frightening in-person visits. And I have heard of debt collectors knocking on doors now. And I believe several weeks ago, a listener had called in about a TV show stating that Capital One, I believe, was going to begin door-to-door collections. Now, that used to happen back in the days. The debt collector used to knock on your door, okay? But nonetheless, it appears as though here they're referencing it again. But now it appears the industry has found far more troubling strategy. Filing lawsuits against debtors, consumers, often consumer advocates say on the theory that they won't ever show up in court to defend themselves. Now, I've spoken many times before here on Thor that many of you don't show up when you're sued on a debt collection. Some of it is based on your conscience, that you, in your mind, you say that, yeah, you know, well, I did have the debt, and yes, I did get the credit card, and yes, I did participate in that business function, or, you know, so you don't go, you know, because you feel, one, they're suing me, what's going to happen? Some of you actually believe that. There's nothing they can do. You know, they're suing me for something I don't have or I'm not willing to give. But I've said to you many times that the default rate of consumers not appearing or answering debt collection complaints and lawsuits were somewhere upwards of 92%. Okay? Now, that's a high percentage of people not showing up. Okay? So you wonder why the Legal Society and others have decided to invest in this field, because who knows how to use the legal system better than the Legal Society? Many of these companies are owned. Debt collecting companies are owned by the Legal Society. Why? Well, that's their arena. They're comfortable with the law. They know what the law says. They know how to interpret the law most of the time. Okay? And if they know, as a business person, if they know that there is a field out there, all right, that can guarantee you 90% return on your money, that's not a bad investment, which is why you see Warren Buffett buying or not being able to demonstrate your knowledge of commerce, the law, the consumer protection law, and he's counting on your ignorance and your fear of going to court and defending yourselves. So let me go on with the article. The consequences are dire when the debtors don't appear in court. A judge can put a lien on someone's home, garnish wages, even freeze bank accounts, all without a person ever getting a chance to fight their case. And at times, collectors file suit in error. Consumers interviewed for this story described cases where they were never told they were being brought to court. And let me explain that. A lot of these debt collectors, there was a big case out of New York where this process-serving company and an attorney, a law group, law firm, or a few of them were serving debt collection cases on people's old addresses, on addresses that wasn't really legal addresses. And it was a scheme and scam concocted by the process servers and the law firms and debt collectors. Okay, I forget the names of them. You can Google it. I believe the case is still going on, and it was and the city had gotten, the state had gotten involved, I believe, New York, and they said it was probably about $100 million either consumers or $100 million I'll finish the article here and tell you. Over the years, we've heard from thousands of people who found themselves at the end of one of these default judgments. Susan Shin, a senior staff attorney at the New Economy Project, a consumer advocacy group. And most of the people we talk to haven't received any kind of notice that they were going to be sued. So this is a growing concern. It is not new. It's been going on, and it's going on now and reaching some of the mainstream media news outlet newspapers like the HuffPost. And that's where you can find that article. Willie Wilson, a 69-year-old retired veteran from Elgin, Texas, lost his late mother's home because he never received notice that a debt collector had sued him. Wilson learned when he had the house appraised in 2009 that a collection agency had filed suit against him early that year over an unpaid $2,500 MasterCard bill. Wilson was troubled on two accounts. While normally Wilson would have been served a summons to appear in court, he never got one, and he said he never had a MasterCard. Can everyone hear me, Layla, Lori?
Yeah, you just came back on right at the beginning of that. But there's something that keeps interfering with the audio. It sounds like a fax machine or something like that going off. I don't know if it's one of our lines or what.
Okay. Yeah, I keep hearing something buzzing and whatnot.
Let's see if we can correct.
Yes, but you can hear me and Lori can hear me?
I can hear your beautiful words.
Okay. Beautiful. Is Layla there? Is she here?
Yeah, she can hear you too. She was hearing that weird sound as well.
Yeah, I did too. All right. Well, hopefully that's cleared up. So I will continue with the article. And let me find my place here. All right. So 69-year-old retired military person didn't know a debt collector had sued him. And apologies for the
I think someone's trying to communicate with us.
Oh, shucks, the aliens are here.
I think so.
Man.
That's what I'm saying, man. Tap in and tell me something. Come to Planet Mama.
We better take a minute off and try to see what E.T.'s trying to tell us. Maybe change direction.
I'm going to have to record that code.
Direction.
I'm going to figure it out. Carry on.
At any rate, we all know how these things work. These debt collectors are very ruthless. They're unscrupulous. They will do anything. And we see that in the alleged foreclosure debacle. We see it in everyday life, which is why this forum is here. We understand that economics, aside from anything else, I tell you my belief is that you really can't be honest with anything, whether it's religion, whether it's family, if you are losing your economic stability and platform to third, fourth, fifth party unscrupulous debt collectors. So we have to pay attention to that, but the stories are endless how these debt collectors will almost do anything to gain your money. And I'm sure that article had a lot of stories in it. For some reason, I can't get it to pull back up. There's a lot of stories in it that the community may be interested in, some of which have experienced matters similar to it or may will. So this is why we tell you to communicate with those debt collectors before they get to that point, you know, have a paper trail already in your possession and document everything. Document everything. So they're doing what they normally do, lying, stealing, and hopefully the information and education you get here at Thor will help you turn those tables. They have enough money, okay? I told you they only pay pennies on the dollar for the worthless pieces of paper. So they have the money to be able to pay you, which is why they'll settle with you. And if you don't cost these debt collectors any money, you're really not going to have any effect on them. They will be the worst paper terrorists you've ever experienced, okay? And they know how to do it. So definitely use the information here given at Thor and use it to your advantage and turn those tables. If you're out of work, this will be a good secondary or primary job for you, because I'm sure most of you, most of your day are consumers, and most of these entities and companies you deal with on a regular basis are debt collectors. Some of them are creditors. Many of them are debt collectors. In this case, you will see that our fear of going to court and our lack of knowledge of the laws that governs our conduct and behavior in commerce can hold some very severe consequences. So I'll finish reading you the story. The 69-year-old retired veteran from Texas lost his late mother's home because he never received a notice that a debt collector had sued them. Okay, he only owed $2,500, okay? But since he had been found liable in court, it was too late, okay? He didn't have the $3,500 he now owed. And the law in Texas, okay, again, Texas keeps coming up, y'all. The law in Texas allow a debt collector to force the sale of a home if it's not someone's primary home. Okay? All right? So if it's not your primary home in the great state of Texas and this debt collector pulled some monkey business and sued you and served it to your childhood home address and got a default judgment against you, Texas law allows them to take your home. Wilson, who inherited the three-bedroom bungalow from his mother, figured he would sell it himself first. "I really didn't want to sell it," Wilson said. "I was going to fix it up and eventually pass it on to my kids." As the debt industry has ballooned over the past decade, collectors' lawsuits against consumers have skyrocketed. A study published last year found there were more than 200,000 cases filed in New York alone in 2011. 200,000 cases. Did y'all hear that? In New York alone. Okay? Using litigation to get consumers to pay off old debts has proven a lucrative tool for such firms. Notice the word firms. For the four debt-buying companies that disclose their earnings to the public, income from legal collections rose from $582 million to more than $1 billion between 2009 and 2012, according to a recent report by the Center for Responsible Lending. And those of you that has not visited that website, you need to visit the Center for Responsible Lending. They have a plethora of information regarding debt and debt collection. So there is no national data on how often people who are sued by debt collectors show up in court. Hopefully none of that data pertains to any Thor listeners. A Maryland study from 2010 found that debt collectors often go unchallenged. Hopefully that is not any Thor listeners. The study, which looked at thousands of such cases, found that fewer than 2 in 10 borrowers who were served actually responded to their summons. We're going to change those statistics here. One of the problems with debt collectors' appetite for litigation, consumer advocates and attorneys say, is that they may not have all the information they need to prove their claims. How many times have we heard that? How many times have I said that? as debts get older and are often bought and sold multiple times. Let's think of this for all you foreclosure people that feel that you are in foreclosure. Okay? When they talk about debts getting sold multiple times, isn't your assignment of deeds, assignment of mortgage, isn't that a debt being sold after default multiple times when you have multiple assignments? You marinate on that for a minute. As the debts get older and are often bought and sold multiple times, crucial information about the borrower gets lost. Some of you have done modifications, and they say they lose the paperwork. At least that's what they say. It's almost a game of telephone, said Leslie Parrish, who co-authored the recent Center for Responsible Lending report. I sent everybody that report. If you're not on the mailing list, you need to get on it. DebtShow@yahoo.com.
Back in the house.
They saying documents. Share of accounts with documentation provided at time of purchase. In other words, when the debt collectors buys these alleged debts, the share of accounts with documentation provided at that time they purchase it is only 6%. Okay? So let me put it in this context. When you all are out there doing these modifications, what are you doing when they offer you modifications? You're sending them a copy of your pay stubs, your bank account, your tax forms, okay? Your retirement account, all of your income. You're submitting a new application, where you work, where you're employed, how long you've been there. Layla, does it not sound like a brand new loan? Layla? Okay, maybe Layla's not here.
Yeah, I think she was trying to call back in.
Okay, let me get her back on. I'll get her back on. But much of this information that y'all use in these modifications are the information that more than likely the debt collector does not have. And you're providing it to them when you fill out those modification documents. Okay. Layla, your line is open. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yes, and absolutely. That is a brand new loan.
Brand new loan. So you're doing, and I've said this to you over and over again, you're doing brand new loans when you're doing modifications. You're giving them the information because based on this report, only 6% of them come with the information, and 94% is not provided enough documentation to even call you on the phone, much less sue you. Okay. But when collectors come to court with insufficient or incorrect documentation, consumer lawyers say overwhelmed judges aren't always able to thoroughly scrutinize the claims. What I translate this sentence to be is the judges just rubber stamp them. Unless you are really providing some substantive affirmative defenses and offensively going after them and maybe at times, if applicable, the attorneys who bring those cases. Because I've said to you many times, the attorneys have purchased these debts, and they are behind these debt collector companies. I'm just telling you, I have played Halloween with many of them, and I have unmasked many of them. When you get into discovery and disclosures that are supposed to be provided, you will realize who these subsidiary companies are connected to, meaning the parent companies, and some of the names on these companies' roles. You will be surprised. I won't. In New York, Ellen Brown, 44, said she got a letter from the county sheriff in April notifying her that her wages were going to be garnished. The letter, Brown said, stated that a judge had issued a default judgment against her for $10,000 Chase credit card. Brown said the sheriff's letter was the first she's heard of the lawsuit. She believes the debt collector must have gotten the wrong person. She said she never had a Chase card in the collection agency's paperwork and had her middle name and last four digits of a Social Security number wrong. Last month, Brown sued the collection agency and won. As a result, the judgment against her was vacated. Okay? Sound like somebody that was on Thor. Debt collectors say they are performing a valuable public service. If consumers were allowed to default on payments without repercussion, more would do so. And borrowing costs for everyone else would go up. So here you have the third-party debt collectors that pay 5% on the dollar for this piece of paper that purportedly represents thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and they say they are doing a valuable public service by harassing you, taking your money, and having you pay on something. They paid a nickel, and you're paying a dollar or more. This is the mindset of these oppressors, that they're doing a valuable public service, that if consumers were allowed to default on the payments, okay, now the creditors done wrote it off, they done charged it off, they done got their tax credit based on their profit and loss statement, they've sold it for pennies on the dollar to the boogeyman debt collectors, and they're saying they're doing a good service by having you pay 100% for something they paid 5% for, and that the original creditor has already received credit for in some manner or fashion buying through their losses on their books. Get a load of that. Moreover, they claim that it's sometimes necessary to turn to the courts to collect on outstanding debts when all other methods of collections have failed. So if that's the case, then why are they lying and serving you at an address? Or why are they getting this lady's Social Security number and name wrong? Why? They don't care. Why? Because I keep telling y'all that they leave a lot of money on the table and they account for it. They're only paying a nickel, okay, for a dollar worth of worthless product that they're appealing to your conscience to believe that you owe them. You may owe someone else, but do you owe them? Is their financial injury a dollar when they only paid 5 cents for it, even if they were entitled to collect? Do you have an obligation or contract with them? How many times do you hear the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and all these other agencies tell you they don't have the paperwork, they don't have accurate numbers, they don't have accurate information to even call you about the debt? Okay? But yet, some of you out there are not showing up to court because, one, you're intimidated from even the debt collector's standpoint, but you're intimidated from the legal society because you don't think you know enough of the rules. But that's what we show you here. Okay? It's not difficult. All right? Or before you even get to court, we're showing you how to communicate and have intercourse with them, so to speak, and be able to avoid or avail yourself of a legal action or protracted battle down the road. Many times they don't want to go there. If you send them the proper communication, they don't want to go there. Okay? Again, what are they moving for? The debt collectors are moving on the 90% default rate. Mr. Warren Buffett buying $4 billion worth of debt, he's moving on the premise that 90% of you won't show up. And then the other 10%, he'll just put the legal society on, and he figures y'all not going to beat them either. Well, why do you think the legal society has petitioned Congress to be removed from the definition of debt collector? Somebody's doing something. Some Thoreens out there, some Thor supporters and listeners are doing something that has concerned the legal society that they, although they're working for the debt collectors, although they're looking at this particular individual whose name and Social Security number doesn't match the lawsuit, your attorneys have a fiduciary obligation to investigate even surfacely that information to make sure it matches. And here they are. They want to be removed from the definition of a debt collector, and they're providing the information to the court on behalf of a debt collector. So in other words, they want a pass to be able to do anything, make all kind of mistakes, and not be held accountable. For those of you that are on my email list, I sent out a video of a judge in Florida dealing with foreclosures that has found hundreds, thousands, and millions of dollars in overcharging attorney's fees, process serving fees. For those of you that were able to watch that video, this judge was pretty irate. It wasn't one or two. There is always going to be erroneous charges with these debt collectors, especially foreclosure. I'm just telling you right now, there's not a calculator in the world that can add up this alleged debt as it pertains to a mortgage or any type of real estate transaction that is going to come out to be exactly what you owed, even if you owed it. Okay? And this video showed you how one gentleman was charged 12 times or 6 times to be served at multiple addresses. In other words, he was served at his home. I think he was served at his ex-wife's house. He was served at his job, and they charged him 3 or 4 times to serve him with the same complaint multiple times. Okay? So what are you saying, Brother Sharif? Let me just take you back. And he said he was going to sue for fraud, which I just think was, he said he got an attorney, and they were suing the banks for fraud. You're not going to win the fraud thing. All right? Let me just keep it real with you. Fraud is very difficult to prove. Most of the time, the evidence needed to prosecute a fraud claim is in the possession of the bank or the debt collector. And when you try to move to get it, okay, you think they're going to give you the weapon that they use against you? You'll fight. And it's a long, protracted battle that is sometimes demoralizing. And then you have to get to that point. You have to get to the point where you're at discovery, meaning you have to survive a motion to dismiss and other dispositive motions and procedural motions that they will levy upon you. Okay? So with this video, how do you tie it, Brother Sharif, into what Thor teaches? Well, fraud, we might as well forget it. Fraud is not mentioned in the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It's not mentioned in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It's not mentioned in the Telephone Communication Protection Act. It's not mentioned in your state consumer protection laws. Okay? But let me tell you what is mentioned, which may apply to such charges. Attorney fees charging more than the contract, than the mortgage or the deed entitles them to. Or them charging you for, if you're in an alleged foreclosure action, charging you for inspection fees and for answering your QWRs, and I've seen that, and all these other charges that are not allowed or afforded within the contract at all. So where is it in the consumer protection laws that we're allowed to hold them accountable? Well, one of the areas, this is 15 U.S.C. 1692F, unfair practices. Many of your states will have state consumer protection laws entitled unfair practices or unfair deceptive practices. All right? And I'll just read it to you, 1692F. A debt collector may not use unfair or unconscionable means to collect or attempt to collect any debt without limiting the general application of the foregoing. The following conduct is a violation of this section. Number one, the collection of any amount, including any interest, fee, charge, or expense incidental to the principal obligation unless the amount is expressly authorized by the agreement creating the debt or permitted by law. Simple as that. So if they charge you a dime, a dollar, a nickel over what is expressly allowed in that agreement, and also let's not forget whether they are party to that agreement anyway. A lot of you allow these debt collectors to piggyback off of a creditor relationship you may have had with someone else. They're not even party to that contract. They can't even enforce the contract. But what you would say is that even if they were party to that contract, sir, they're not entitled to charge me that much or overcharge me for anything. Okay? Now, some of you may want to rely upon, the RESPA, gives you a couple of thousand dollars. A couple of thousand dollars is nothing compared to actual damages that you may get under 1692F, okay, for them violating 1692F, which is unfair practices. Okay? What else could it come under? 1692E, false and misleading misrepresentation of the character amount of the debt, the legal status of the debt, threats to take action that cannot legally be taken. So if you say I owe you $2,000 and I found out you owe $1,000, you say you're going to sue me for $2,000, didn't you levy a threat upon me that you cannot legally take because you can't legally sue me for $2,000 when I only owed you $1,000 if I owe you that? Real simple. I didn't have to use 10 dictionaries, 18 appellate court cases, 4 Supreme Court judges, and 8 different definitions. Real simple, 1692F, 1692E. All right? And if you call me a few times on that debt, then you may be subject to 1692D for harassment and abuse. Why? Is it not abuse when you say I owe you $2,000 and I might not owe you anything, but let's say I only owed you $1,000 or $1,500? Okay? So the gentleman that participated in that YouTube video with that judge, where she was just irate about the type of charges the attorneys were levying upon already defaulting near homeless homeowners, she was pissed off and she summoned a few of them to come to her court to explain. But when he said he went and hired an attorney, he was going to sue them for fraud, I said, man, you barking up the wrong tree. They're debt collectors. Okay, and he's going to go in court, and he's going to argue, my mortgagee, and I'm a mortgagor, and they're going to be like, all right, that's beautiful. He thinks we're his creditors. We want him to think that. We want him to play that lane. He still doesn't recognize us or identify us appropriately. Okay? Because he wants to play the mortgagee mortgagor game with debt collectors. All right? So I'll just finish up the article and I'll go to the next topic. It says, but consumer advocates are this group here, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Okay? Are consumer advocacy groups. The Center for Responsible Lending, or consumer advocacy groups. All right? So they say, but consumer advocates say it can be difficult for many borrowers to even know who owns their debt or to get in touch with those agencies if they can figure it out. All right? For those of you on the email list, I'll send you this article. Very interesting. It should enrage you somewhat to know that every direction you turn, whether you're on a Wall Street Journal or Huffington Post or Yahoo, there's always an article about debt. And you cannot say they have not told you multiple times, which is why I still don't understand why people are defaulting and not going to court if the debt collectors are being honest about serving you properly, which we see they don't always do. So let's say half of the 90% really was served properly. That means 40% or 50% of you are not going to court. Why, I don't know. It is an opportunity for you to eliminate the alleged debt and also get some money for them trying and attempting to collect something that was not due and owing to them. All right? In other news, we see that New Jersey approves the use of eminent domain to fight foreclosures. Now, this is a topic that I have not really discussed Yet I will render my opinion on this. And it started out in California where the states were trying to come in and snatch up all these properties using eminent domain. And, you know, it's kind of, it gained some steam and then it lost some steam and then the pipe burst and then they fixed the pipe and now it has more steam. And, you know, some of them have gotten together in New Jersey, and Newark, New Jersey has been the first to approve this method of using eminent domain to fight foreclosures, right? So what they're doing is they're getting together, and it's funny when you read this article, and I'll send it to you, those of you that's on the mailing list. When you read this article and you have the requisite knowledge that I have about all four corners of this debt industry, it alleges that the state is going to, will allow homeowners trapped in certain types of mortgages known as private label security or PLS loans, okay, to voluntarily participate, always look for the word voluntary, participate in a program where the city purchases these mortgages from investors. Now, who are investors? Okay? I encourage all of you to go look in your mortgage contracts, your deed contracts, and find the word investor and bring it back to me. You can do it now. You can do it later. You can come on the show tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Putting you on a Thor witch hunt. Find me the term investor, okay? And I'm going to say something else about the term investor and how it's used in some of these letters you will receive regarding some alleged foreclosure. At any rate, they're going to purchase the mortgages from these investors and repackage them at terms homeowners can afford. Okay? Now, let me tell you what I think is happening here. We all know that these alleged loans and mortgages and deeds are being purchased by third, fourth, fifth party debt collectors for pennies on the dollar, sometimes nothing. Okay? So what you have here is the state taking an opportunity to buy these debts. Let's say the debt collector buys it for 5 cents on a dollar. The state might decide to buy it for 10 cents on a dollar. Give the debt collector a little bit of money. They buy it for 10, 15, 20%. Sell it back to you using eminent domain, the power of the state to confiscate property, and sell it back to you at maybe 60%, giving you a good deal, giving the state some revenue, and it's all the same thing, okay? State just want to jump in on the action, all right? Simple as that. Why the state can do it? Because the state knows that the banks don't have any interest in these loans. None. They know that it's been written off. They know that credit default swap insurance has paid it. They know multiple other insurance and policies has done pay these loans. They know the banks can't prove that a loan is owed and the amount that's owed. So the state's like, give me a piece of the action. You've dogged out all of our citizens. Why you think they have the multi-billion dollar settlement with the state? Okay? So the state has gotten paid billions of dollars based on your injury. By the way, you're still dealing with those injuries. And now the state wants to jump in on the action and buy the debt from the investors, not the banks. They use the word investors, okay? Not banks, okay? You have to be able to read with understanding. He said they're going to buy the mortgages from the investors, okay? Just ask them to define the term investor. Investors are debt collectors, hedge funds, private equity groups. That's what investors are, okay? So that's what New Jersey is doing. They figure if anybody is going to abuse their citizens, why not the state that you're a resident of? Why don't we get in on the action, okay? Instead of the debt collectors buying it up, let us buy it up. And that'll increase the revenue of the state, and the state will be selling you back your mortgage. Yeah, it'll be a better deal than what you have if that's what you consider a better deal. Okay? So Any comments from Lori and Layla on that particular topic before I go to the next?
Brother Sharif, you know, as you were talking about that, it just took me back in time when I was working in the mortgage industry years ago, and we're talking about these third-party creditors. I remember I was working on a project, and we were due to receive, maybe 1,200 loans. And prior to receiving those loans, you know, the only information that we received was basically a printout, and then we needed to work on this printout. And the printout only had, you know, the name of the party that had the loan, maybe their address. It had the original loan amount and what was the unpaid principal balance. And I remember looking at some of these. Let's say somebody had a $50,000 original loan. You know, say the unpaid principal balance is like $61,000. So I'm like, well, how, you know, at that time, like, how could that be? And it was just the conception of somebody being behind was just really unusual to me. And so, you know, they say, oh, those people are the ones that are in default. So we understood that those people were going to be the ones, now I'm looking back, they were the ones that were targeted to pay up or ante up, or maybe they're going to move and foreclose against them. But I'm just basically focusing in on the data that we received. We didn't get those files maybe for maybe almost 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe even a month. And some of those files trickled in over time because they were not ready to be delivered, but we still had to do work on them prior to receiving those actual files. So as I'm listening to this article and we talk about these debt collectors and these whatever obligation that is sold over and over and over again, they don't have the records, and they're just moving forward and they're pursuing what they need and what they perceive to be, and they don't have the actual account history. They don't have the payment history. They, you know, they don't know what has transpired on those transactions prior to receiving that printout. So I move forward to today and say, okay, well, you know, the same situation is going on a massive wide scale. And just like this article is saying, what we're talking about, everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon because it's a free-for-all. The industry is unregulated. So when it's unregulated, I mean, it's a free-for-all for everything, for everyone.
Well, this is how they justify it. They're saying for the investors it's a good deal because look at it this way. They're saying, so investors, look at it that way. Would you rather see eminent domain use and receive fair market value or see a five-year prohibition on all foreclosures? Well, listen, y'all got to listen to what the state of New Jersey is basically Thor-hammering the banks and the investors by saying, this is your option. We can get in on the game and be able to get it from you for market value, or see a five-year prohibition on all foreclosures. So they're saying we'll put a halt to all foreclosures for 5 years, and then see how far you want to go on that. So here's the tug of war, because that's your real choice. The city of New York is saying that the status quo is simply not an option. Now they're saying, you know, that they're gonna sell the houses back to the people when you apply for this program at market value. But let me say this to you that are doing modifications out there, and what you may not know. Most of these modifications are not done within the guidelines of the programs they were designed for. In any modification, your loan, okay, is supposed to be 30% of your debt to income, and the modification may not exceed 95% of LTV. LTV is loan to value. Many of y'all doing those modifications, you're up far above 95% LTV. So in other words, if your house is worth $100,000 and you did a modification, your payment should not exceed 30% of your annual income, and your principal balance should not exceed 95% of loan-to-value, meaning if you had a $100,000 house, then you should be financing, refinancing, modifying, whatever terminology you want to apply to that program, you should not be financing no more than $95,000. So it puts you in a 5% equitable position, okay? Which makes sense because you should be able to modify that house if you choose to, okay, in a position where if you went out and bought it, you would be paying just about market value for it. Okay, makes no sense to put somebody in a modification that's 120, 130, 150%, Layla, LTV. You're guaranteed to default. And those of you that, and if you look at the statistics on modifications, most people that do modifications default within the next year or two. Yeah. Why? Because your economic position hasn't changed. The economy is still perceived to be bad. And you're in a loan that you'll never get out of because you're still upside down. What's the sense of modifying a loan, especially if you do it with a debt collector who only paid 5%, and then doing it for above market value, which is close to where you were anyway? Okay? And what they do is they take the years and they extend it from a 30-year loan to a 40-year loan, give you a stair stepper starting at 2% interest rate, and within 5 years or 4 years, you're up at 4%, and then another 2 years, you're up at 6%. Like, these are debt collectors that are doing these modifications and getting brand-new paperwork, brand-new income information on you, brand-new signature on a note. I'm just saying, consider the truth, okay? I have a question in the chat. What determines market value? Layla, you want to answer that question?
Yes.
In your infinite knowledge and wisdom in the mortgage arena?
Well, the market value, it's a twofold question because I was just kind of recalling back on these HAMP loans. First of all, before I get to that answer, when you were talking, Brother Sharif, you know, this number that comes in my mind, 130%. They were allowing a variance of 130% on these HAMP loans, I know, like in 2009. So if people were not fitting that criteria within 95%, I know that there are some banking institutions that said, okay, fine, we will allow that window to be expanded. And I think that they went and got some approvals. But I don't know all the details about that at this point. But I know that they are allowing up to 130% variance.
LTV on modifications?
Yes, I do know that, yes.
And you say they got approval from the government on the HAMP and making homes affordable and all those programs?
You know, every lender, by the way, when they go in and they come out with their programs, for those people who do not know, they have special, they get special perks, if you will, from Fannie and Freddie. So they go in and they negotiate their own deals with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. All right, so when you go from one lender to the next, even though there are guidelines, they may have a special deal that they would have negotiated that allows them to do something that the other institution cannot do. So this one particular institution went in and they got a variance. It's what we call a variance to be able to go a little bit higher. In some cases. So, and whether or not that became mainstream, as I listen to you speak, that seems like it became mainstream because once one institution gets it and somebody else down the road from a competitive perspective says, oh, well, you know, how come they're doing it and we can't? Because they're getting feedback, and then they want to go in and get the same variance. So then it becomes more mainstream. That's how they do things in the banking world. But to answer the question regarding market value is basically what the market will bear to in a situation where you're going, somebody wants to buy your home, what will the market bear to be the value? So, I mean, we could be looking at the value yesterday or we could be looking at the value today. In an upward market, we expect appreciation. So if you bought your house, you know, yesterday, anytime in the past, and you purchased your home for $100,000 and the market improved and now the property is worth, let's say, $120,000, $150,000, then the market value of your property today would be that $120,000, $150,000. And even though you bought it maybe for $100,000. So now you've got this equity of $20,000, maybe to $50,000 in your property. Okay, so it's just based on what that market value is going to be based on. Is it going to be based on yesterday or is it going to be based on today? And how they determine market value is based on an appraisal.
If you have someone like, you know, Lori, who comes out of the real estate profession, and you call a real estate professional to come in and market your home for sale, then they will come in, they'll go in and they'll search comparables. They'll go ahead and say, okay, well, the house down the street, you know, the house down the street that from you, they just sold a house maybe, and we looked like within the last 6 months. 6 months ago, within the last 6 months, they sold that house. Now you've got new neighbors. They sold that house, let's say, for $102. Okay, and then, you know, you've got a neighbor down the street or across the street. They're looking to sell their property now. It hasn't sold yet, but they've got the house listed for $105. Okay, well, what's going to happen is with that appraisal report, they're going to go ahead and search the neighborhood. They're going to search your community and the neighborhood and surrounding area within 1 mile, usually. They try to keep it closer than a mile, but within 1 mile of your home to see what the average price of the home's comparable to yours. So if you have a standard three-bedroom, two-bath home, they're going to look at all three-bedroom, two-bath homes and compare that home to yours. And based on the amenities that you have, if you have fencing, if you have a swimming pool or not, if you have a two-car garage or not, you know, or if you have, you know, other amenities, you know, sprinkler system versus somebody else, they're going to take each one of those items and they're going to look at them and they're going to say, okay, well, how does your house compare to these houses? And they're going to come up with a value. So let's say, you know, even though that house didn't sell, they're looking for sales. But let's say you go in that 1 mile radius and you got one house that sold for 102, you've got one that sold for 95, and you're looking, your value, you know, should be about 100. They're going to compare them and say, okay, this is what the mean value of your home is when we compare it to others. And it's not an emotional thing. It's all about dollars and cents. You know, if you put $2,000, $3,000 in fixing up your bathroom and the average cost of a bathroom is, let's say you spent $3,000, the average cost to do a bathroom is $2,000. Well, they're not going to give you the full $3,000 for your bathroom. That was something that you threw in extra. They just look at the mean value. So market value is what the property could sell for today in the marketplace compared to other homes.
Okay. So the gentleman was asking whether he can rely upon Zillow and Redland. No. You have to get an appraise. And in this distressed market, it's hard to determine what figures they're going about. This is what I do know. The debt collectors have stolen a lot of property, so they need those market values to go up. And in the mainstream media, that's all I hear, that home prices are going up because they got to get a return on their investment. They have to be enriched.
Correct.
Okay, so that's happening. Let me go to something else when you talk about programs. I don't know of any of those programs that were modified based on the banking institution relationship with Fannie or Freddie. I know that the Making Homes Affordable had its requirements and the other home loan programs had their requirements. And there was one that I use a lot for people that were with Bank of America, and you need to look it up. If you qualify for this program, if you were a part of that settlement and there were certain fraudulent practices that Bank of America had admitted to and or was found guilty to engage in, and that was the National Homeownership Retention Program. And Bank of America only had a little link on the bottom of their website for it because it was a program designed. They would not tell you about this program, and they would not advertise it because they had to give you a principal reduction, okay, principal forbearance. They had to do a term extension and reduction in the interest rate, period. Not adjustable, okay? Not a stair stepper like they do with the other HAMPs. The HAMP was for anybody, okay? HAMP was for anybody. To make the homeowner's retention program, they had to do 30% of your debt to income. That means 30% of your payment per month based on your annual income. And 95% loan to value. And this is why they didn't push the program, because they had to do that if you qualified for that program. And you would almost have to choke them and tell them, I qualified because my loan was in 2008, around this time when Bank of America had done that crazy stuff with Countrywide. And I was part of the settlement that they had with the Justice Department, had put out that program. So if you're with Bank of America, you definitely, and you want to do a modification, that's something you definitely need to look at. Let me tell you another area where this loan-to-value and market value comes into play. And many times I hear a lot of the securitization audit providers, some of them know a good bit, some of them don't know anything, and some of them, a lot of them act like they know. If you have a banking institution, let's just say debt collector, because that is what they are, and they're alleging that your loan is owned by some REMIC, okay, real estate mortgage investment conduit, which is what it's called, okay, then, and they're saying that it is existing now within that REMIC, more than likely your home is underwater. It cannot exist in that REMIC if the loan to value is over 100%. That is in your pooling and service agreement. It cannot be in there. Why? It's no longer an asset to the investors. It can't be in there. It has to come out. Okay?
Brother,
because it's
losing
money.
One more time. Repeat that one more time.
If your loan is allegedly existing inside of a REMIC, meaning they're saying that the certificate holders of the ABC 123 Trust, blah, 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 owns your loan, another reason why you know it's not in that REMIC is because any mortgage that is over 100% LTV, meaning that if your house is worth $100,000, it could only stay in the REMIC if it's worth $100,000, okay? If you owe $140,000 and it's worth $100,000, it cannot stay in that REMIC. It will have to come out because it is no longer an asset. It is a liability. Why? Because it's lost value. See, the whole vision of securitization was that the real estate market would always increase. And for years, that's what it did. Layla, you know that. Lori, you know that. If you bought a home, it was almost like investing in your 401K. You know, you used to remortgage your house to send your kids to college. You used to say, okay, well, I have $100,000 in equity tied up in my house. I'm going to save that, pay for my mortgage in 30 years. And by the end of 30 years, it's going to be worth more money because of inflation and everything else. But you have to understand that when this mortgage debacle and crash occurred, a lot of wealth was lost. Y'all keep thinking about the loan end of it, but a lot of wealth, a lot of people like you and I that were working for years had saved our equity in our homes for better days down the road. So there was a lot of people that lost their equity that didn't refinance. There were times where you could get two and three houses. Okay, and you knew the property value was going to go up. You can buy them, you know, they'll be worth $100,000. You can buy it for $80,000 with already $20,000 in equity. Layla, you would know about that. Or you could put $20,000 down and you had some equity in it. So people lived off of equity. Or if people needed some money or wanted to go on a trip or buy a boat, buy a house, or put their kids through school or, you know, buy another house, they would take the equity out of their home. Now there's no equity. There's none. You're underwater. Okay? So just keep that in mind. If you have a REMIC on your documentation, on your assignment, and they're telling you the REMIC owns your alleged mortgage, you will tell them there's no way. And you can just say it without getting all complicated. Brother Sharif said, my property right now is worth $100,000. I owe $150,000. Okay? So that means, pursuant to the pooling and service agreement, that loan would not exist in the REMIC, and we all know it's not in there anyway. That's just another way of telling you. But that was the other program, which is a national homeownership retention program that they had as a turn. About investors, you know, I'll share this with everyone. There was one of my listeners that sent me over a response from a debt collector, and this language you will see often, all right? And he sent out a notice of dispute, and they returned the answer by stating that your investor is so-and-so. It'll say your investor is Fannie Mae, or your investor is Wells Fargo, or your investor is so-and-so, all right? You have to understand words, all right? And you should know by now that the only terms you're familiar with in a mortgage transaction, and Layla and Lori would know this, is either mortgagee, lender, creditor, mortgagor, borrower, okay? There was never the use of the term investor. Never. Have you ever seen that, Layla?
No. No.
You've been doing mortgages for how long? 25 years?
Yeah, at least.
You sold thousands of homes, correct?
I mortgaged thousands of homes.
You mortgaged thousands of homes. Have you ever seen the word investor used?
No.
There you have it. An investor, by definition, is a person who allocates capital with the expectation of a financial return. Does that not sound like a debt collector? The types of investment include gambling, which is what they did with Remix, and speculation, equity, debt securities, real estate, currency, commodity, derivatives, such as put and call options. Does that sound like the transaction that you participated in when you executed some documents for the purchase of real property? No. They can't change the definition midstream or at the end of the game. You have to go by the definitions, if you want to, that exist in your particular contract. Now, if you see a debt collector using language that is not within your particular contract, wouldn't that tell you that they probably just don't know what the hell is going on in that contract? Because if they were a creditor, they would know how to speak creditor language. Okay? If they was authentic, they would know the language between a mortgagee and a mortgagor. And that term is not investor. So you have to look out for that. And when they send you that, in my opinion, that is a violation. Because you're saying you're an investor, and I can't define that word anywhere. That's their way of lying to you softly and hoping you don't pick up on it. Okay? And they adopt these words and send them out into the public, into the court system. Some of the lip syncers adopt these words, and they use the word investor, and it always makes my antenna go up because I've never seen the term investor except, like I just read you the meaning, okay? A person who allocates capital with the expectation of a financial return. A debt collector buys your debt at 5% and is trying to get a 95% return. Simple. Real simple. Again, just ask them, what's valuable consideration? Okay? What's investor mean? What do you mean assign? You know, those questions are meat and potato questions. Okay. In other news, Aquin executive said we do not require gag clauses for modifications. When you sign these modification agreements, I want some of you that have already executed them, go back and read it. All right. Might be too late now, but go back and read it. Okay. One of the tricks that they use against you is that they'll tell you that an ABC REMIC owns your loan, right? Now, just get this. Follow me. They'll tell you the ABC 123 certificate holders for
the investors,
okay, own your loan. But then when you apply for a modification, you don't see that ABC certificate holders 123 on any of the paperwork they execute. It will clearly tell you that you're doing a loan with that alleged servicer, who is normally the bank that probably originated the initial consumer transaction you engaged in, and you're doing another loan through them, and they don't even mention the remit that they said on it. I don't see how y'all don't pick up on that when you're signing these modifications agreements. How can they say the creditor or the lender or the holder in due course or the note owner owns the note, but then when you sign the paperwork for modification, that's a 40-year agreement, they're not even mentioned in the paperwork. Think about it. Go figure. All right? We have to read. We have to pay attention to what they're saying and what they're doing. It does not and will not ever make sense. All right? So, see what other news is out there that is worth mentioning. Debt collection and debt buying, the state of lending in America and its impact on U.S. households, the Center for Consumer Lending. I urge all of you to go to that site. A lot of information there. It's the Center for Consumer Lending. All right? Very interesting article. Those of you that are on my contact list, you got a copy of this article. And it's a sad but real demonstration of how this debt collection arena is causing more problems than you and I ever thought it would. And this is why Thor has taken this lane, because this lane is more important to me, okay? Sure, the religion is important. Religion is important. Spirituality is important. And it's important to be able to maintain our sanity when everything around us is being taken from us, our homes, our money, our wages, our property. And ultimately, I've read articles where it's resulted in people losing their kids. How do you say that, Brother Sharif? Because when you lose your house, you begin to lose your mind. When you don't have any money, you begin to lose your cool. And when you have nowhere to stay, then that's when the state comes in and takes your kids. It's happening all across this country. It is driving families into poverty. Do you understand? These debt collectors will drive you into poverty if they take every dime. Or let's look at real math. If they only pay 5 cents for a debt and they take from you 95 more cents or take from you a full dollar, what are they doing? Enriching themselves and putting you in poverty. And you don't owe them a thing. When they go to court and they say you owe them $1,000, they have to prove that they have a financial injury of $1,000. So what do you ask them for? Your forward flow agreement may be one. You subpoena their documents, their records. Do they have any? Well, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the police department of the debt collector said they usually don't have anything. The Center for Responsible Lending is telling you only 6% has documentation, and that doesn't mean the documentation is accurate. That means they have a piece of paper that usually they send to you, which is some spread-out sheets that you don't know where it came from. Heck, they can have typed that up in their computer. They can't prove you owe a debt. They depend on you proving it. They depend on you accepting that they're an investor and you not catching the word investor. Or valuable consideration, and you don't catch the word valuable consideration and ask what that is. If you sue me for $100,000, you have to demonstrate an injury of $100,000. I'm going to say that again. If you sue me for $100,000 alleging that that is due and owing you, you have to prove that. And if I ask you one simple question, did you buy the debt? How much did you pay for the debt? That might be one question I ask. You're not the original creditor, so what did you pay for the debt? Did you come in court today and lie and said that you had a $1,000 financial injury and you really only had $50? Think about that. Is that not a violation under 1692 E, F, Think about it. There's nothing you can talk to me about, throw at me regarding a mortgage or any debt that I cannot find at least three violations of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, period. So continue playing the mortgage game, the mortgagee mortgager game, and see where that gets you. Some people are out there of the belief that you can go there, utilize somebody else's forms, somebody else's documentation, somebody else's motions. And I'm just telling you, me and my staff and my ministry group see some of the most ridiculous demonstrations of foreclosure defense I've ever seen in my life. Lip syncers and people that claim they know something, helping you with alleged foreclosures. First of all, not identifying whether you're in foreclosure or not, not even bringing that up. But they feel that they can go in no matter where they are. They can be living in the state of New York, and you can be in the state of Colorado, and they feel that they can provide you with a document that's going to help you in your Colorado foreclosure, and they know nothing about Colorado law. Layla, if you went as a licensed mortgage professional right now and moved to Colorado, could you apply the same laws from Texas in Colorado?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. So you have these document assassins, I call them, and they'll create documents that in my paralegal years, in my years as a person in this arena, I've never seen such motions called a verified motion for demand and compel and product. I mean, I don't even know where they get these titles from. Or I'm a state citizen, I'm sovereign, I'm a natural man, natural woman, and all this other nonsense. And these are the documents that everybody just loves. They love silver bullet documents. They come out monthly. And this is supposed to have some bearing on a debt collector. So you think you're going to use their forms to gain some benefit out of their system? You are sadly mistaken. You are sadly mistaken. If you're still out there allowing others to lead you into a protracted battle on a mortgage or foreclosure, when debt collectors cannot utilize the court for that purpose if they're not a mortgagee. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm talking to everybody. If you're playing that game, I've sent everybody on this, on my email list, examples, which is what you'll never see with a lot of this other disinformation. I've sent you examples of the type of damages one can receive just for one violation of these consumer protection laws. Just one. Sent you a lady that got $8 million for them trying to collect a $9,000 debt. I sent you information on a case out of Florida where they tried to collect $800 and he received $125,000. Where do y'all think these damages are coming from? Who is telling you that it's only $1,000? Who's telling you that? They're the same laws that I'm talking about. Why is it one person will get $8 million or $10 million or $100,000 on an $800 debt, a half $1 million on a $1,000 debt? Where do y'all think these damages are coming from? They're coming out the same law. I didn't hide anything from you. There's no secret pages. There's no boogeyman. There's no hidden agenda. There's no Thor excluded page that we reserve if you're able to pay us enough to give you the remedy or the answer. Some of us have been so corrupted and spinned around so many times that a simple answer just doesn't seem like a simple answer, because everything has to be complex. Everything has to be 18 law dictionaries, 19 Supreme Court justices' opinions, 1933 laws, AD 20 laws. The government's not real laws. The Real Estate Settlement Procedure Act, TILA, rescind the loan. All these different things they throw at you when I'm telling you there's millions of dollars you may be liable. They may be liable to you, and you want to play around with some cut and pasters that's going to help you stop a debt collector from doing a foreclosure. It just sounds crazy. It really sounds like a dentist doing a baby delivery. Just doesn't happen. But for those that do listen, they're thawing a lot of these debt collectors. I get the emails. I just don't brag. I get the emails. You heard the gentleman in the top of the call. I've been having some success. Okay? Sending one letter, getting $2,000 knocked off. That's $2,000 you would have had to pay. We can talk about all those other things, all those other topics, but if you're broke, how are you going to make it to church or to the cathedral or to your mosque or to your temple? How? How are you going to maintain your livelihood, your family stability, your marriage? These debt collectors cause suicide. Y'all seen it. People are committing suicide. They have nothing, no money, no home, being garnished, taxed to I don't know where. And if you can't provide for your family, if you don't learn the laws that can put you in the ground, either mentally, emotionally, or financially, what are you doing? What are you doing? So you become weak. You become vulnerable to listening to people that don't have the answers, that are overlooking answers already in front of them, and you're overlooking answers. We have to become educated and knowledgeable about what our consumer responsibility and obligations are. We're a consumer more than we are anything else. You are buying, purchasing something every day. You have cable, you have utilities, you have credit, you have homes, you have credit cards. How can you not learn commerce from a consumer, creditor, and debt collector standpoint? How can you continue to engage? It's like you go into the military with no training. Then you wonder why the default rate is 92%. These detractors have you going to court and wanting to beat up the judge, beat up the attorneys, and send them all kind of documents and tell you not to even go there and all that kind of stuff. They don't want you to go there. Think about what this article says, that 92% of the people don't show up. Then match that with some of the lip syncers that you hear out there say, don't go to court. You don't need to be in there. You shouldn't be in there because of your race or your ethnicity or the fact that you're a man or you're a woman or you're a natural person or you're not an artificial person, all that stuff, they tell you don't go there, and that continues to feed their 92% default rate. You think it's a coincidence? Who's telling you not to go to court when the rest of the governmental agencies are telling you they don't have what it takes to win? They don't have what it takes to win. They don't have the proper paperwork. They can't account for it properly. They can't tell you how much they owe. They can't take the instruments that they already have out there are already tattooed in the public. What do you mean, Brother Sharif, when you say tattooed in the public? Those assignments of mortgages, assignments of deed of trust, those are permanently affixed to your county recorders, meaning that they're not ever going anywhere. And you let a debt collector put some document that is permanent in the public against your character and your property, and you're letting somebody tell you don't go to court. Or you're letting somebody sell you a package of 50 or 60 documents aside from the evidence you have right in front of you, and they haven't taken the time to break down the defectiveness and errors of those documents before you buy something else. You want to go to the cut and pasters and let them lead you all the way down that road that's never ending until you absolutely lose your debt battle and or your foreclosure, and now you're in poverty, as this article says. Poverty. There are some people out there that haven't recovered from debt collectors. If you have a contract with a creditor, you absolutely need to honor that contract. I don't understand this movement of people that tell you to basically deny everything. Sure, you deny everything to a debt collector because the burden of proof is on them to prove that you owe. Layla.
Yes.
You owe me $1 million. Prove you don't owe me $1 million.
And who are you that I would even answer?
I'm telling you that you owe me $1 million. I got a piece of paper here that you owe me $1 million. You prove that you don't owe me $1 million is what I'm asking.
You need to prove to me that I owe you $1 million.
Are you denying that you owe me $1 million?
I need to know who you are, and I need for you to ascertain why.
Well, you borrowed $1 million from Lori about 5 years ago, and Lori told me I bought the debt from Lori or was assigned to me. And are you denying that you borrowed $1 million from Lori?
I need proof of that in order for me to engage with you about anything.
You denying that you bought? Didn't you have a transaction with Lori?
I need for you to ascertain and prove to me what you're saying is so.
Have the document here. I mean, the document right here says you borrowed $1 million from Lori.
Whatever it is that you're talking about, I need for you to provide to me, and we can move forward from there. I need you to evidence such. I don't know who you are.
Good. So this is what the debt collectors are saying to you. You borrowed money from Lori, and I'm here collecting from Lori. And Lori's sitting right there now. Lori didn't say anything. Lori didn't say, yeah, Layla, you got that $1 million from me. Lori probably gone. She probably insolvent. She probably filed bankruptcy. She probably on an island somewhere laying down, you know, getting a tan. Lori has nothing to do with it. Layla didn't talk to Lori at all either. Okay, there's nothing written to Layla that said, hey, be expecting Sharif, because he's going to collect that $1 million you got from me. All right? There's some document that's filed somewhere that's not even signed by Lori in the form of an assignment that's signed by somebody else that said Lori passed on the obligation to Brother Sharif. But Layla wasn't made aware of that, although in Layla's contract it says that if Lori did any such thing, that she has to let Layla know. So Layla can be expecting someone else other than her about this alleged obligation. Okay? So if Layla wasn't smart or asked a couple of questions, and again, she didn't deny that she got, that she conducted any consumer transaction with Lori. She said, if I did, it's basically none of your business until you demonstrate that I have to talk to you about it, because you said I borrowed something from Lori. You're not Lori. And that piece of paper you have, that assignment that you have of that debt, I don't care if it's a credit card debt or mortgage debt, okay? You have to prove that you have standing, and I'll give you a different word for standing in street terms, you have to prove that it's your business and not none of your business, what I may have did with somebody else. You have to prove that. Don't ask me no questions. I'm going to ask you the question. You want the $1 million? I got the $1 million. Prove to me I owe it to you. And while you're doing that, you don't have to prove that I owe it to Lori as well. Because I think Lori lied to me and really got that money from somebody else. I don't think Lori funded the loan that you allege that I got. Even if I did get it from Lori, you're going to have to prove Lori got that money from under her mattress, out in the backyard, out of her bank account, wherever she got it from. You're going to have to prove that Lori really loaned that money. And if you have a document that says that Aramic owns it, then I think chances are Lori never spent a dime, might have used the investor's money, which means Lori was not the source of those funds, meaning that I never owed Lori anything, meaning that if you got a debt by assignment from Lori, you didn't get anything because Lori never funded it. Y'all get what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
That's how it works. You're going to have to prove everything. And if Lori's not here anymore, or God forbid Lori passed away, or Lori went insolvent, that means the bankruptcy court kind of dealt with that, and you shouldn't be coming after me unless you got some documentation saying that you could. This is the game they're playing with you, and the result is if you don't learn what you need to learn, it's poverty. The little bit of jobs that you have left that used to pay $100 an hour is now paying $50, and then the debt collector is coming after the $100 that you don't have. What's the result? Poverty. Chaos. Crime. And y'all have several laws available to you that can turn those tables. Call the FDCPA, the FCRA, the TCPA. Your state consumer protection laws that all result in you receiving a monetary settlement for their attempt or for their success in collecting a debt that was never owed to them. This is what's before you. But instead, you're listening to all kind of other information that, first of all, is going to keep you spending money to fund the lip syncer's experiment and verified motion to compel. I mean, y'all Google verified motion to compel. I see some of the most entertaining pleadings from these so-called worldwide attorneys. And I'm not talking about real attorneys. I'm talking about some of your leaders in the foreclosure industry that supposedly are helping you beat a debt collector in a creditor's court. Let me move on. Layla, Lori, did you have something to say?
No, that's awesome. I think it's awesome, though, that you're bringing out those the crazy motions and this and that. We might as well just say, I motioned to court for a one-legged chicken. It ain't happening. One-legged chicken, please. That's what I'm motioning right now. That's all I'm saying. Just saying that.
I'm going to do a verified motion to compel the aliens to come down here and snatch you up out the court.
That's right.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. And these type of documents and groups are out there, and they're plentiful. And it's annoying because the information that I'm privy to is harmful to the people. It's almost like y'all really don't understand that if you're playing around with something that is not going to work, or if you're funding these experimental projects of these lip syncers, then you are one debt collector lawsuit away from poverty. Or if your mental and emotional stability is not leveled and you might be having marital problems because of it, you are subject to have that wife or that husband come home and do a mass suicide, which has happened several times due to the fact that they were in foreclosure. This is serious. This is nothing to play with. Y'all think this is an attack or this is some Burger King McDonald's competition for business with me and some lip syncer or gurus. No, it's not. It's serious because I know that you are on a destructive path if you don't take this stuff serious. Poverty. Some of you might be high and mighty because you have a job now. You're working. Well, I just read your article that says those debt collectors, they could have served your aunt's mother's cousin's babysitter with a lawsuit on you, and you never got it, and you show up to work with your neck all in the air, thinking you above everybody else, and you might get that garnishment. And you'd be like, huh? Somebody might have stolen your identity and bought a house, and this has happened. You don't know anything about it because you don't check your credit report. And a foreclosure could have happened. This is a true story. A foreclosure could have happened in your name, and you're making $200,000 a year, and they come put a lien on your house and garnish your wages. And then you know what? They say, well, prove you didn't buy that house. Your name, your Social Security number. You heard Brother Ken on the phone, who used to work inside of the debt collection agencies. Okay? And I want to bring this to light. Y'all heard the brother tell you the quality and or lack of quality of the employees that work in these debt collection companies. And he tells you that they're crackheads, recovering crackheads, some of them are just current crackheads, that have access to your name, your Social Security number, your date of birth, and your credit report, as the gentleman called in and said, oh, somebody pulled my credit without an impermissible purpose. Do you understand how serious that is? That is why on the Title 18, if somebody obtains your credit report, it is a crime. Some of you know that, but you take credit reports lightly. It is a crime under Title 18. That's not a local statute, criminal statute, okay? Serious. Crackheads, drunks, felons are working in these agencies that are sitting there looking at your credit report. And you better tune in tomorrow for this show because I'm going to tell you just how powerful and important these credit reporting agencies are. What kind of information do they have? Y'all don't know. Y'all really don't know what kind of information they have. Y'all really don't know how powerful they are. You want to talk about courts? We're going to talk about these credit reporting agencies, and I'm going to show you where the real power is. Okay? We have to become educated in any area that we spend as much time in, which is being a consumer. okay? I hear all the talks about commerce and currency and things of that nature, Bitcoin and all these other alternatives. But at the end of the day, you're a consumer, okay? And if you're going to be a consumer most of your life, it would make sense if you would learn what your behavior should be and what the behavior of those you're engaging with will be. And if they step outside of that line, if they extend their foot beyond the ambit of their authority as a creditor or debt collector, you're supposed to know how to be compensated for those violations. Period. And if you don't know how to, you are one lawsuit, one garnishment, one foreclosure away from being destitute, homeless, and possibly in poverty. Is it not serious yet? If you have a good job now and you're current on your mortgage and you're holding your head up high because you have the means and the Creator has blessed you to be able to pay your mortgage, you still don't know who you're paying. You're paying a debt collector. Your mortgage could very well be in arrearage now. So if it's in arrearage now and somebody has you paying them under the impression that they're your creditor, but really they're not, and maybe that remic is not getting paid, but that impersonating mortgagee is getting paid, who are you paying? A debt collector. Because even though they're supposed to be collecting for somebody else, they're not even letting you know they're collecting for someone else. And even if they're collecting from someone else, they're not telling you that your payments is going to someone else. Find a problem with that under 1692 E and F? Aren't you supposed to know everything that's going on? You can't trust anything. You have to research everything. You have to ask for proof of everything you get in the mail and every phone call you get regarding any debt these days. I don't care if you just did a new loan yesterday. Start asking some questions. There's an article here to add to the seriousness of this debacle that is talking about foreclosures maybe driving the rise in suicide. Right? I mean, this is serious. These are researchers that have looked at the state-level suicide rates from the Center of Disease Control and Prevention. These are serious agencies that is looking at the effect of foreclosure. The last thing people have is their home. These homes, when Layla talk about market value, is nothing compared to the sentimental value. Some people lost their kids in their homes. Some people was raised in these homes. Some people built these homes brick by brick themselves. Some people had construction loans and built their houses and went through the stress of building for 6 or 7 months. I've been there. Only to lose their homes with this type of garbage paperwork that these debt collectors have that collide with each other like bumper cars in Six Flags. You got to wake up. Stop all this fighting over a situation that may lead to suicide, poverty, or loss of our economic footing. And we all know, even to get to church, we have to have at least a couple of dollars to get on the bus now. It used to be 50 cents. If you don't have money to get on the bus to get to your church or your place of worship, now, you don't even have that to rely upon. If you don't have gas money to put in your car, let me go a step further. When we talk tomorrow about the power of these credit reporting agencies, they use your credit report to justify the rate of your car insurance. All right? What is your commercial record looking like, meaning your credit report? So if your insurance is too high, you can't make your car payment, right? Because they're judging your credit report and or your credit score to determine what rate you'll pay for your loan, what rate you'll pay for your insurance. So tell me, how is it when you talk about poverty, how when you don't know this commercial game, you can be affected? If the middle class or lower class needs transportation, and they have these buy here, pay here car lots, and they have secondary credit paper in the mortgage business, and because you have a bad credit score, because you don't know how to clean up your credit in your credit report, and let me just say this, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, these governmental agencies, says that 96% of the information contained in the credit bureaus are erroneous. Almost coincide with the default rate of you appearing for these debt collection lawsuits. You notice how they go hand in hand? It's not their fault. It's your fault. The laws are there. We talk about it every day. Some people like to argue about it. Go figure. So 90%, 96% of your credit reports are erroneous. And this is what they're determining when you buy a car and get insurance. Now, if the average working person, let's say they're making $15 an hour, has to pay a 10% interest rate as opposed to a 5%, that's double the payment. And then because of their credit, they have to pay a higher insurance premium because they're a risk. That's double insurance payments. Do you not think they're driving you into poverty by doing that? Because you have the worst credit, you have to pay the highest rate, but now you got the highest rate. They're almost forcing you into default with modifications. They're forcing you into default where you were paying $2,000 before, and on a modification, you're paying $1,900, like whoopee-doo, $100 a month. And a $20 an hour job now is paying $10 an hour. A tank of gas cost $50 a year ago, now it's $100. Do you understand what's going on? Do you understand the economics, why Thor is so important and why we are so passionate and so irate about nonsense? Poverty, suicide. Think about that. We pick the responsible lane to help you. 657-383-0332 is our calling number. Press star 1. I'm going to get comments from my host, co-host. We'll take a couple of calls and see what direction we need to go in after that. Layla, Lori, have anything on this topic or what I've said so far?
I want to tell everybody to look up 1681Q.
15 USC 1681Q, which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Go ahead and read it for me, Layla. That's the criminal.
That's it. Any person who knowingly and willfully obtains information on a consumer from a consumer reporting agency under false pretenses, one-legged chicken man, shall be fined under Title 18 in prison for not more than 2 years or both. Boom.
Read that one more time for me, a little bit clearer and a little bit louder so everyone can hear you. What's being read now is the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Again, we're not lip-syncing about some foreclosure law or some appellate court case or, you know, all that talk. We're talking about the criminal side of obtaining your credit report without a permissible purpose. Read that again, Lori.
Any person who knowingly and willfully obtains information on a consumer from a consumer reporting agency, that's your TransUnion, your Equifax, Experian, under false pretenses shall be fined under Title 18 in prison for not more than 2 years or both. And the way I like to look at it is if they cannot do it to the President of the United States, they sure can't do it to me. That's just a good filter to roll by. Because he ain't no better.
Understanding when you have these debt collectors who are pulling your credit, okay? And let me say this for you. Debt collectors are servicers. So you're not confused by the language, because we use servicers so loosely when nobody has demonstrated to you that they're a servicer just because they say it. You believe nothing. They want to be a servicer. Why? That's language that is within the creditor-debtor relationship, mortgagee-mortgager relationship. So they love to use that language. And you let them use it, because in your conscience, you feel you're still a mortgage or dealing with a lender or creditor. And I keep telling you, you're not. So if they obtain your credit report, meaning that debt collection company that has those crackheads and alcoholics and felons and people coming out of the halfway house and everything else, looking at your credit report, we all know what's in the credit report, your entire commercial history, your full unredacted Social Security number, date of birth, current and previous addresses, current and previous employers, public records, everything about your commercial life and personal life is in those reports, and you have a debt collector that employs bottom barrel people looking at that information. And then you wonder why you're in trouble. And the government has determined the need based on the sensitive nature of that information to affix a criminal violation to such conduct. Huh? So it might not matter to the people that work at the debt collection agency that they may go to jail for getting it, but it might matter to Bobby Swartwall, who owns the company, because he's responsible for his company obtaining your credit report, not the felons that work for him. Okay? His company, him, a company can be held liable and charged with a crime. The Justice Department does it all the time with banks, with companies. But, you know, if you listen to some of this other information, they'll make you think that these artificial entities, somehow they're just bricks and mortar. Yeah, they are. But as Mitt Romney once told you, a corporation is a person, and a person can have an injury, meaning if that building of bricks and mortar does a transaction to you, we all know that there's some flesh and blood that has to organize and develop these entities. That's why you have a CFO and a CEO of these companies. That's why their names are on as president and vice president. They are held liable along with the company for crimes if they commit crimes against the people. So, no, they're not going to get a big tow truck and put handcuffs around a building and drag it in court. They're going to get those liable. The company can be held liable up to 2 years in prison obtaining your credit report under false pretenses. Now, if you want to continue playing the mortgage game, they've already demonstrated to you, which is why I tell you all the time, you play that mortgage game, you're just going to disintegrate in midair. all the fraud that these banks have done, these debt collectors have done. They've lied, they've robo-signed, they've robo-testified, they filed documents that were totally defective, they've perjured themselves in court. They've done everything you can do under the sun short of pulling out a gun, and not one of them have been charged with a crime yet, and there's no criminal statute under a lot of these state codes. But there is one in 1681Q that says, if you obtain my credit report under false pretenses, you can be charged not under your little state law, under Title 18. That's the big boy law. And you can receive up to 2 years in prison. Nothing to play with. It's nothing to play with because of the damage that you can do to a person with their credit report is unimaginable. Unimaginable. The information, the damage you can do to somebody having their name, date of birth, and social security number is unimaginable. I was watching an article where, watching a CNN news report a couple of years ago where the new thing now is they're filing tax returns in your name. And the last time I read the article, I believe it was last year, the IRS was losing $50 billion in false tax returns, meaning that one of these probably debt collector agencies, you never know, okay, or the fact that y'all give out your Social Security number so freely and your name so freely to anybody. If you go to the supermarket, they're asking you for your information. You go to the dentist, you write it down there. Although you got insurance. And it took them 2 to 3 years to get it squared away. 2 to 3 years. As you know, you can file a tax return, just fill it out and put a signature on it. Do you think they're looking at the signature to see if it matched last year's signature or the year before that? See, this is how clumsy these agencies are. $50 billion false tax returns. Identity theft, Target, 10 billion people, names, credit card numbers, social security numbers, you know, stolen out of, you know, nonsense. Several other companies, information stolen, millions of consumers' information stolen. You have to understand how serious commerce is and how serious protecting your information is. And how serious you must take that when somebody's trying to collect something from you or ask you for information, that you should be careful and diligent in providing that information. And you should get angry when a debt collector has your personal information and you didn't authorize them or give them your express written permission to contact you, call you, or anything else. You didn't tell MasterCard that they can sell your information five times to five different people and expose your proprietary information to all those people and not know what they're going to do with it? Did you give them that permission to put you in harm's way like that? No. So when they access your credit bureau and you look at your credit bureau and you see you had some unauthorized inquiries, you should be flaming mad, and your correspondence to say under 1681Q, you can be put in prison for up to 2 years for what you did. Now, I know y'all seen Law and Order and all these other detective movies and whatnot. What do the detectives do when they arrest somebody? They get Pookie up there and they're like, Pookie, you either going to tell us who shot Ray Ray, or you either going to tell us who your connection is, who's the big wig, or you looking at 2 years in prison? What you going to do? You going to talk, or you going to go lay down in the cell? Well, Pookie decides to talk. Okay? What are you going to do with that debt collector? You did an impermissible credit pull. All right? Now, you want me to shut up or file this criminal complaint with somebody, or you going to pay me about $5,000 because I really don't know who has that information. I could be affected 5 years down the line, 2 years down the line. You should be concerned, I'm telling y'all, about these people, these debt collectors, and Ken told you the caliber of those people having that sensitive information on you. The Congress was concerned about it. They put it there for you, 2 years in prison under Title 18. I better wake up. Let me go to the caller line. 713-3906.
I know.
3906, you're on Thor Radio.
When he's not there, you're doing everything for everybody. When he is there, you want some help. You're not getting, so you just back, and he went.
All right, well, he's having class over there. We're going to 469-6123. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question? 469-6123. All right, people sleep. We're going to go to 920-0098. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question? 920. Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello. Hey, Brother Shree, this is Ron from Wisconsin.
This is who?
This is Ron from Wisconsin.
Ron from Wisconsin. How are you, sir?
I am so blessed that I have been in contact with you. I cannot praise Thor Ministry enough for the help that you have helped me by just making information available. I do want to say to you that your information is so valuable, it is being blocked. I have had to recall in 5 or 6 times because it is being blocked on the transmission. But I thank you for what you're doing, and I praise your team for being so open to share this valuable information, Brother Sharif.
Thank you, Ron. And Ron is one of my supporters from another group who is one of the most religious believing people, peaceful men that I've met in a very long time. And, you know, it's ironic that in our religious cultures, we're taught to be forgiving. We're taught to be peaceful. We're taught to, in many ways, agree with our adversary. But I when I talk to Ron through emails and whatnot, I see that regardless of whether you're religious or not, you shouldn't be lied to when you're honest, God-fearing man. You shouldn't be taken advantage of, and you shouldn't be pushed into poverty or emotional distress or anything else from anybody. And just like, I'll just say this, just like there are certain factions of this world that prey upon different ethnic groups, there are also debt collectors and other societies out there that prey on religious people and rely upon their perceived softness at engaging in any type of war, so to speak. But everywhere people are waking up, we have scheduled several churches we're going to be going to and wake the religious sectors up and understand that when your people are in poverty, and Ron has a church as well, when your people are in poverty, that weight falls on the church. It affects everybody. It affects tithes. It affects offerings. It affects churches. There are churches in foreclosures across this country that are churches that are falling. So people don't have at least their religious edifices to find solitude in.
That's right.
And this affects us, because if we don't have that, what do we have? If we can't run to the church, what do we have, Ron?
Right. It's affected my marriage. It's absolutely devastated my marriage. I've been married over 30 years, but this is destroying my marriage and my home and my church.
That's right.
But I tell you what, Brother Sharif, I have, my eyes are wide open now, and by your help, brother, I felt like you have come, even though I haven't met you personally yet, I feel like you have come along beside me and strengthened me and give me a resolve to keep pressing forward. And I realize this is a spiritual battle that we are facing in our entire world, brother.
That's right.
Well, you're a good man. I appreciate your sincerity and your honesty and your willingness to help the people. And I praise you, brother, and I thank you so much.
Thank you, Ron. It's a joy to talk to you.
Just an honor to talk to you.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for supporting. And Ron means that. He emails me words of strength almost weekly. And I feel like he's family. I've shared things with him. I'm going to help him do all he can to get these oppressive debt collectors off of his back and anybody else's back, and I want him to be able to go to his community, his religious community, and say, hey, we can't turn the cheek anymore on this. This is not somebody that we owe. If it's somebody that we owe, sit down, let's work it out. But if somebody that we absolutely know we don't owe anything to, no, we don't turn the cheek on that. No, we don't turn the cheek. We pull the rod out.
Yes, sir.
Pull the rod out on that type of behavior. So we're here for you, Ron. Yes,
sir. I offered to pay these people, Brother Sharif. I five times I sent them letters, and they ignored me. I said, listen, I'll pay off the whole thing. I just want my note back so we can have a note burning at the church. I offered five different letters to pay them. I have this entire situation documented with 15 lawful notification letters that have been certified mail sent to this group of people that's trying to take our home. So I have it all documented. I just didn't know what to do with it. I offered them to pay the whole thing off. Just give me my note back. I want to do what's right and righteous and honorable and pure and holy. And these people have walked all over me and just trampled on me.
That's right. They've woke up the church now. They've woke up a lot of religious groups now, because certain religious groups may be talking turn the cheek and be humble and be honorable, and we're always going to be honorable even when we pull out the rod and use the law against them. But, you know, at some point, you push people into poverty, you push marriages into destruction, and you increase the suicide rate, and you put this kind of burden on the churches, then the Creator is going to get involved. And I'm telling you right now, you need to, when you get into it like I am, you start to look at the stock and the value of these debt collection companies in New York. I mean, Attorney General just hit them for $500 million. I mean, they're getting hit real bad, and they're suffering. I mean, their stocks are absolutely down, and they need to go further down. And I'm hoping we're doing our part to arm the people to be able to do that. But it is a spiritual war, and it's a spiritual war to wake us up to stop being passive about this, because I'm talking to you about poverty and death.
I'm talking
about death of our churches, death of our people, and death of our spirituality. And it is a spiritual war. And if we lose the spiritual war, something or another is going to happen. Either we're going to turn violent, which I hope we never do, or we're going to turn to the book. And that's what I'm trying to get the people to do, is to turn to the law, because the law is on the book to deal with.
Yes, sir. And Brother Sharif, I appreciate you. And and I have been in contact with you, and I'll be in contact with you again. And I appreciate your – you are such a honorable man to answer and talk to the people. I've never seen anybody that was so willing to answer emails like you do it. And I know you're so busy. I don't see how you have time to do it. But I thank you for what you're doing, and I will be in contact with you some more. And we'll discuss this situation, and I just want to do what's right. I'm just tired of being pushed under. They're trying to drown me.
That's right.
And they're trying to drown my entire family and put me on the street homeless.
That's right.
And I've got a hold
That's
of
right.
you in time. I'm not in that other lane that I used to be. I have followed some gurus. But I am in the debt lane now, and, brother, I intend to stay there. I can give up the home, but these people are going to pay for the damage they've done to my home, my marriage.
That's right.
They've affected my children. And man, right. when you can't think right because you got family trouble, it's hard to defend yourself.
That's right.
So I thank you, and I'll be in contact with you some more, and
we're gonna
get closer as we go. Thank you for taking my call, my brother.
God bless you. Thank you for your blessings. We appreciate it. All right. Yeah, this is I love when we have to understand again the seriousness of debt when our religious leaders, and that fine gentleman you heard, he's a pastor of a church, and he's experiencing catastrophic marital damages as a result of the unsureness of their residency, of their economic stability. So when you have the pastor and a leader, a father, leader of his home, devastated, stressed, unsure, and the rock of that house, okay, which is the man, which are many times the providers, are shaken like that, then what's his mindset and his condition when he goes before the people to try to strengthen them? Well, this is why our mother Rudy and Layla and Lori were taking the message to the churches, because they need to wake up and they need to understand these leaders will. Ron will go to the church after we work with him, after we continue to arm him. He will go to that church, and he will tell his parishioners to arm up and turn the tables on these debt collectors, cost them some money. They can't afford all of those actual damages. They can't afford to even pay the minimum $1,000 liability under 1692K for every debt they're trying to collect. That would bankrupt them, okay? Not counting the actual damages and punitive damages they may be subject to under 1692 and 1681. This is serious. We're arming you with serious, 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 serious laws. And the lip syncers take it serious, take it for a joke. They want to have you following this theory and that theory that doesn't have any substantial return of damages for what they do. It's serious. It's a spiritual war. They're trying to break you spiritually, or they're trying to run you right to that very book. And we have to put the Bible down for a minute and pick up the laws that governs our behavior and theirs and start using it. Start using it wisely. All right, let's go to I think the mother is in, 336-6554, Mother Rudy. Welcome home. Where you been? Are you there, Rudy?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you now.
Hello? I've had so
yes,
much
ma'am.
Difficulty getting on this phone this morning. This is a little
wow.
bit late, but I think very timely, so I'm going to put this out there based on what I've been able to hear off and on. And it's just a little food for thought, and it was on poverty, believe it or not. And so poverty defined is a general scarcity or lack of or shortage of or the state of one who does not have a current, like a certain amount, rather, of material possessions or money, or poverty could be a state of being inferior. So therefore, the way I see it, from what I have learned, and I am learning and where I sit, poverty can also be a state of mind. I believe that poverty is the measure by which a set of standards have been set forth to be the norm. And when something or someone falls below that certain level, then they could be perceived to be in poverty. But as far as I'm concerned, poverty is a state of mind that can be changed. So once you have been educated in an area of which you're lacking, you can elevate yourself mentally above the so-called poverty level. Once you become a free thinker, you can overcome anything. So we are here at SOAR to elevate you out of that muck and that mire. So my question is, who has the measuring stick and who's doing the measuring? And my answer to you is, you have the measuring stick and the ability to make change. So we have to study to show ourselves approved and get out of poverty. Poverty does not exist with SOAR, and poverty should not exist with anyone on this line because the educational information is available here. Thank you.
Amen. I love that.
I love that
coming from the mother. Mother, knowledge and wisdom. Not a lot of words. Powerful, though. And it is a state of mind, because what is our state of mind? Do we think we're in foreclosure when a debt collector cannot participate in any foreclosure event normally, generally? Do we think we owe somebody that we don't? Sure, that's a state of mind. Do we think that cutting and pasting and, you know, utilizing all these offhanded, off-road processes and procedures and anti-this and anti-that rhetoric, do we really think that's going to cause them some damages? I don't think so. It's our state of mind. Do we think we're broke, or do we think we are the centerpiece of commerce? If you stop going into the banks today, would the banks still be loaning money without the people to loan it to? No. But can the people still go on and do what they're doing without the banks? Yes. So who is really the centerpiece of commerce? I think what's happening is a restoration, a readiness, okay, a reset of the mind and the spirit, to where we understand what we're dealing with. They've been too comfortable with us not reading. They have too many distractions out there, too many groups, too many people that take you away from the truth. Meanwhile, you're still signing contracts every day. You're not reading. You're not knowing what governs that conduct and behavior you're participating in. You're a consumer most of the time, but you don't know what consumer means. You're dealing with creditors, but you don't know what creditor means. You're dealing with debt collectors, but you don't know what debt collectors mean. Meanwhile, other people are creating rainbow-like theories to make you believe that you have no obligation to anything that you do. We have groups that don't want any discipline, that don't want to be held accountable for anything that they do. We are in a day of reckoning. We are in a spiritual war. They're trying to make you think that black and white hate each other. Okay? They're trying to make you think that one ethnicity has it worse than the other. Yes, that's sometimes true, but all of you are not reading. Because if everybody read what Thor is presenting, none of you would be in poverty. All of you would totally shut down all of this foreclosure action, instead of you begging the government, signing up for a government program, thinking that the HAMP program, thinking that this program, thinking that program, thinking you can contact the Office of Thrift Supervision, thinking that you can do this and do it. If you stop relying on the government and rely on these laws, you stop the foreclosures totally. You stop the debt collection totally. The alleged foreclosures, let me say. And if I don't say alleged, you know I mean alleged. Period. If we just started reading and writing and getting on the same page, White people got mailboxes. Green people got mailboxes. Brown people got mailboxes. I think even some of the aliens that's living amongst us, they got mailboxes. They're all getting debt collection letters. That debt collector don't know what your name is, what you look like, what the color of your skin is, and what mailbox the letter is going to. They don't even know if it gets to the mailbox. So let's stop this race stuff. Stop letting the national news media make us think that one is better than the other. Long as we're in poverty, we're going to be begging our government for something. A program to help us with our mortgages because we don't want to read. A program to help us with housing because we don't want to be independent. We don't want to start our own businesses. We don't want to come together. We want them to fix the problems that they create. How much sense is that? Let's go to 412-1568. You're on Thor Radio. We have 5 minutes left in the live stream. If you want to continue this conversation and you're in the chat, you need to call 657-383-0332. We will go one more hour if necessary or shorter. 412-1568. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Hey, Sharice, can you do this here for me, bro? Can you make me, like, say the next caller? Because I'm getting ready to, I'm getting ready to get a lot more fixed, and I wanted to ask you a couple questions. Appreciate
All right,
it.
No problem. I'll keep you up there. All right. 772-5218. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Shalom. See, Sharice, this is me. I'm on another phone.
Okay.
I'm traveling, so I'm enjoying.
All right, mother.
I'm enjoying everything. It's just beautiful, and we all have
Thank
to come
you,
together, and we can't look at the pigmentation.
That's right. That's right.
You have to be one.
That's right. And you know, Mother, what I'll say is that I'm going to say that I think Thor, from most other groups that I've listened to, probably has the most diversity of them all. Because I believe in a peaceful environment. I don't look at pigmentation. I look at the people, and I know that the power is in the people. And I don't think I focus on that. I'm not going to have discussions on it. I'm not going to have discussions on religion and who was here first. You know, once you get into dealing with legalities, you will start to differentiate between hearsay and facts. There is nothing, in my opinion, that's factual about anything that happened years before I got here. You know, I mean, nothing. I mean, if I didn't see it or witness it, I'm not a competent fact witness. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of anything that is out there prior to my existence. Nothing. And I believe what I know, and what I choose to believe other than what I know is just hearsay that I choose to believe as being a fact. I can't fight you about it, though. I can't beat you up about it. I can't call you names because of something I believe in that I was not witness or party to.
Yes, yes. And see, Sharice, the thing about knowing what is right, knowing the truth, then you stick to it, and the others who don't know it and they see that truth works for you, they're drawn to you. That's what's happening. It is all special. Phone now.
That's right. That's right.
Phone out.
No, your phone's still here, Mother. All right. The mother thought she went out, but she didn't. Let me go back up here and see. Layla, Lori, Rudy, y'all have anything to add before I go to the next call? Again, if you have a question, press star 1-6-5. You have 60 seconds to call in, 657-383-0332. Press star 1 if you have a question. Let me go back up here. Lori, Layla, Rudy, do you have anything else to add before I go to the next question? Uh-huh.
Yes, I just wanted to share. I mean, I meet face-to-face with a lot of people, and I have met face-to-face with a lot of people in my journey, in my career path. And, you know, one of the areas that, you know, you touched on today is really bringing home some things that I'm hearing in the arenas in which I flow. You know, this whole debt process, we heard Ron speak, you know, this whole debt process issues that we're experiencing, it's demoralizing. But people that are upstanding, people that want to take care of their business, you know, all we want to do is pay the right party. That's really the bottom line here, and we want to do the right thing. Those that are righteous want to do righteous things. And I deal with people from all walks of life, you know, from way down to the bottom. I've gone into some homes where you can't even get through the front door. You've got a pathway, just a pathway leading in the door. You can't sit down at the table. You can't sit down at the dining room. You can't. You just have a pathway down the hall, and that's it. And then I've been in some very opulent places, you know, where people, you know, just live very, very well. And you can just see, and it doesn't matter, this whole dilemma is social economical. It's hitting everybody on every level. You know, we talk about, you know, people that have have saved their entire lives, who've done responsible things. They've saved, they put monies in their 401ks, you know, they've had their IRA accounts, their SEP accounts. You know, if you've been in business and you have a KEO account, you've done all these things, and all of a sudden to see it just poof and go away. You know, I've come across some people who say that they say we're not going to be able to retire. All of our money is gone. And then we walk into places like Walmart and we see the greeters, you know, they're gray-haired. And, you know, one Walmart that I frequent, the man is hunched over at like 90-degree angle. And he's a cashier. And I'm like, why do they have him working as a cashier? But he's happy to do what he's doing. He's just so grateful that he has a job. And he must be, I don't know, I don't want to ever gauge somebody by age, but he's an elder man. And it's just a very, very sad state of affairs. And you touch on, and what I'm bringing forward is this suicide. You know, suicides are up. And I frequent a group. I was invited into a group, and, you know, we have our meetings. These are business owners that are looking to propel their business, and come together and mastermind. And, you know, I hear somebody on the call that we come together on, and they say, well, I just counseled somebody because they were just telling me that they were going to commit suicide. They were thinking about committing suicide, and they had to spend time with them to talk them down. And I'm like, wow. You know, you bring these numbers forward and say, you know, the numbers are up. I have a personal experience with one of my clients. You know, I've traveled the country. I visited with this family. This is in a different venue than mortgage. I also hold an insurance license, and I've been working in the insurance business. And I travel the country to sign people up on the insurance programs that they are wanting. And it's related to their mortgage, by the way, coincidentally. So I'm still related to the business. And I sat down with this family. We had fun around the table. I enrolled them in the plan that they were wanting to make sure that their mortgage is paid off and all the other venues that they wanted to have for their protection, you know, so they wouldn't have to worry about anything. I get a call from the wife 4 months later that her husband had passed away. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. You know, I immediately went back to the time spent around the table having fun and the things that they wanted to accomplish. And so, you know, naturally I asked her, I said, you know, what happened? You know, he seemed to be fine when I met him, but we never know, you know, how people are feeling when we meet with them. And that leads to another issue, however. And so she was very hesitant with me. And so I said, you know, I understand if you're, you know, this may be difficult for you. I was just concerned because, like I said, he seemed to be fine. And so she said to me that, these are her words, she said, they said that he committed suicide. And I'm like, oh, my God, are you serious? I mean, I didn't say that to her. This is what I'm saying in my head. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so, but I just say, I'm so sorry. Then I immediately went to her, you know, to say to her, I said, look, listen, please do me a favor. Send me, she said they performed an autopsy, please send me the autopsy report. Because my first mind was, oh, my God, they just signed up for this plan. And for those of you who are in the insurance world, if somebody just applies for insurance, there is what they call an incontestability clause. for the first 2 years of the insurance, they can contest. They don't have to pay, and suicide is not something that they pay within the first 2 years of their insurance policy on a life policy. So I said, please get me that report. Please let me look at it. And, you know, I had to painstakingly take a look at that report. And to me, when I read it, it was conclusive that this man drove off somewhere, put a gun to his head, and shot his brains out. And the autopsy report is very specific, very detailed. They talk about the angle, what they do, how they do, what the angle, what the findings are based on the medical examiner. And so I now had to be the one to tell her that this policy is not going to pay off their home. I could not do that over the phone. I couldn't. I had to get in my car and drive from my state in Texas to the state of Louisiana where she was, and I had to sit down with her to give her this news. That, if that's becoming an epidemic, as we're hearing, it's a very, 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 very sad state of affairs. That is the most difficult thing I can tell you all that I have ever had to do in my life. And this is ruining families. It's ruining livelihoods. And I'm so grateful to be associated and a part of SOAR because we're helping to empower people so they know that they need to dust themselves off, pick themselves up. We are a format and a place that people can come to and bring their issues so we can help put everybody on the right path to stand up against these debt collectors that are putting so much oppression upon us and say, you know what, we're not taking this anymore. And when we can go to the CRA, Title 18, 1681, pew, and say, you know what, we put you on notice. Keep messing with us. Keep messing with us. Brother Sharif, that's here.
Indeed, good information. And, you know, when it reaches a level that, again, we respect all religions here at Thor. We don't pass judgment on any religion. None of us on here, to my knowledge, I know I haven't, stated any religion that we may or may not be connected to. That's for us and not a topic of this show or will never be of this network. But when you hear our religious leaders starting to feel the pressure, and they are peaceful people, okay? They have their heads in their Bibles, and they're the most peaceful people. When you start cornering, pushing those people in the corner, and they ask you 100 times, who do I pay? What do I owe? Tell me, how is it I owe them? And you're not answering those questions. You should start answering those questions when you start getting sued. And we shouldn't be held hostage to any legal society that does not want to carry out the will of the people and start taking these debt collectors to task. Some of you are finding that some of them are reluctant because, as I told you, some of them own some of these debt collection agencies. Okay? So this is why I teach self-empowerment, the people being able to do what no one else can do. Stop depending on the government. Stop depending on any one society to do what it is. If you put a little bit of time in, you can do. If you do some communication, effective communication, you can, if it's a legitimate debt, you can knock down, hammer out, Thor some of that principal balance by using the laws against them. Yeah, they are on the books. They've always been there since the 70s. I didn't discover it. It's nothing new. It's been there. Okay? It's been there. Let's start using it and using it effectively. Let me go back to the caller line. Let me go to 623-2632. I recognize this number. I think it's the sister Unique. Would I be correct? Survey
you
says.
You are correct.
All right. Peace and blessings.
You
sister, how's
correct.
Everything?
It's going pretty good. I'm enjoying the show. It took me a minute to get on today. There was some freaky stuff happening at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I think they're starting to, you know, I'm not gonna throw out, you know, I find it funny when they say that. I don't know if it's the NSA or the government it might be the aliens, Unique. I don't know. The aliens might own some of these debt collection agencies, and they're just like, what you giving that stuff out for, Sharif, man? Go sit your little tail down somewhere, Malachi. Stop doing what you're doing. You blowing our cover.
You.
Halloween should last all year, not just October 31st.
Exactly. But they don't look at it like that. What I wanted to expand on was what everyone has been talking about today about the poverty and the suicide that Sister Layla was just talking about. That kind of hit home to me. And I also have a question after the comment. So the comment of stress is I've said something about this before on Thor before. Of people not realizing the amount of stress that is attained from not being able to do what your right is to do, which is to live. If you know that you need finances in order to live and someone is trying to take those finances, like the gentleman that was on the phone earlier, what he said was they're trying to take his livelihood. They have destroyed his marriage. They have destroyed all these things that lead these people to do the things that Sister Layla was talking about and Sister Rudy was talking about with the suicides being through the roof now. You have people that are professionals that are committing these suicides. These are not just your middle-educated class people. These are upper-class people. These are doctors and lawyers and people that have debt beyond what we know that they have. What people don't understand is that these people have $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 debt just off of their student loans. They have debt, this, and that's the beginning. And most of the time, their spouse also has some kind of student debt, and then they have a mortgage, and then they call themselves keeping up with the Joneses and everything else, and then they go and they kill themselves because they can't keep up anymore. Everything that they've worked so hard for and they spent 8 years in school for, almost half their life they have spent this time in these places, and they don't know what else to do. They don't know where else to turn. They think they're in the part of society that's supposed to be able to give them the answers, and they're not giving the answers. Some of them go so crazy, well, they kill their kids and their wife. Then they shoot themselves.
That's right. That's right.
I had a gentleman myself that was a patient myself that did this probably about 5 years ago when all this stuff just started happening, and he messed up. He messed up. He killed his kids. He killed his wife. The gun misfired on him, and he shot off half his face. Half his jaw was gone. So now he has to live with the fact that he's going to be a homeless, disabled person that shot his family in a time of complete mental torment, and then he's going to jail for it. This is what is happening to people. This is what I've seen with my own eyes with people. This is out of control. The stress level that people always talk about these belly fats. Oh, this is how you get rid of belly fat. You eat this, you eat that. It has nothing to do with that. It has absolutely nothing to do with that. That's that stress that's building up on top of your stomach. That's what that is. It is adipose stuff. It's nasty stuff. It's not adipose. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of something else. But it's fat. It's fat on top of fat, full of hormones, and those hormones are caused by the stresses that people are going through. The stresses are coming from them not knowing where to turn. They can deal with it, but they don't know where to turn. So people need to start getting the message out to understand, you know, what is going on at Thor. They need to understand that to be ready is to know that you have a problem. Just like with an addiction, you have to realize that you have a problem. Once you realize that you have a problem, you are now ready to go ahead and reset yourself find out the information that you need to find out and keep it pushing from there. Once you're able to find out those information and the things that you need, you can simply restore. That's why he always says, ready, reset, restore. That is the purpose behind saying that. There's a purpose behind that saying, I don't care how you apply it to your life. It applies to your stresses. It applies to your finances. It applies to your health. It applies to your mental health, everything. It applies to everything. If you can just get ready, just like a track star does, before they get ready for that race, they have to get ready. They have to stretch. So stretch, get up, understand the things that you need to understand so that you can go ahead and reset, finish them, handle them, and then you can be restored. And you don't have to worry about feeling like this, because what we're suffering from, people don't understand, is PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And some of them have even more implications, because the ones that even have that on top of that, with that type of syndrome, what comes with that? Rage, anger. That's why these marriages break up. What else comes with that? Depression, not being able to move, pain in your body. These are all symptoms. The entire nation, I don't care what you look like, is suffering from this from all angles. We need to understand it's from all angles, and the economic angle is the easiest one to deprive somebody of their freedom. It's the easiest one to take advantage of. Then you have your health and everything else on top of that. You have to read, you have to study, and you have to be able to take control of your life. If you do not do that, there is a problem. Now, with saying that, with the stresses and everybody else, the people that are out there, this is my question, the people that are out there with not just student loans, because that's not what I wanted to talk about, the people that are meeting ends meet, okay? Those people that are not necessarily in debt, well, they are because they have a mortgage and because they have credit cards, but they pay their bills on time. They are at ends meet. They're not in credit collection mode. Other than paying off those debts and simplifying their lives, since they're not in that transfer yet, but let's say they've been in their house for 10, 15 years, how is there a way to lower the bills that they already have is what I guess I need to be asking. Because some people aren't in this situation just yet. They're still able to meet their ends. But
sure,
they fear all of this stuff that we're talking about coming, and that's why hopefully they're listening and they're learning, you know, so that if it does come, you can handle it before. But before it happens, is there anything that someone can do?
Sure. I mean, do your investigative work. Look in your county. Understand that most people that are current with their mortgage does not mean that they're paying the right party. You need to do some investigation. You need to ask some questions. If you feel like you're in a creditor relationship, then you use the proper communications for creditor from consumer to creditor. If you feel like you're in a debt collection situation, use the proper communications with debt collector. But I would definitely do an investigation and try to find out with this mortgage fraud, you know, whether I am truly paying the right party. First is to ask, okay, because you might get an answer such as, oh, yeah, well, we forgot to tell you that your investor is this ABC 123 certificate holder, or we forgot to tell you that we had filed this assignment. Many times they won't file an assignment until you're in default. They're just holding it, you know, they're holding it. So you really have to do a couple of things. This is why I say, although there's a lot of securitization service providers out there, some of the information is useful. And we're going to have somebody this week, and I've been able to, through my securitization experience, be able to come up with some information that the people and supporters and listeners of Thor's and the subsequent members will be able to use to find out, even if they're current, whether their mortgage is being held by the party that is demanding or receiving payment. So there's a lot of things you can do these days, even if you have a good credit card and you have a good account. It's the time to negotiate. Good credit, which is what we promote here at Thor, is worth 10 times what it was worth 4 or 5 years ago, because most people don't have good credit. They don't know how to clean it. They don't know how to correct the erroneous information that is within it. So if you have good behavior right now, you can almost name your price. Layla would tell you, in this market, if you have credit and cash, you can almost, like, I'll pay you this much for that house, or I will do this interest rate, or I will, you know, put zero down. You can almost do what you want. And this is one of the areas that we're going to push a little bit harder, because many people, when you listen to Ron and you listen to other people, they're all four corners of their commercial person is just cracked and diminished. They're in a bad debt situation. They're being harassed. They can't get additional credit, okay, because their credit is ruined, and they don't know how to fix that part. If we can put up a couple of walls, show you how to deal with the debt collectors that are before you, start increasing your credit worthiness, your consumer buying and purchasing power, through better credit. Now you begin to look at things differently. Now that psychological stability increases. Now your positivity increases, because now you ride around your neighborhood, and instead of worrying whether somebody's going to put your clothes out on the street, you're riding around looking and say, well, wow, that $200,000 home is now $100,000. I have good income. My credit has been repaired and restored by Thor. Now I can look at buying that house. Now that house that they're trying to take, it's not so much of a bigger issue, because I know I can get another one. So we're looking at things from a strategic standpoint. And if you have credit out there, you should be saying, listen, you got me at a 4% interest rate right now. The good credit people are keeping commerce going.
Right.
Okay? So I need a 2% interest rate right now, or I'm just going to close my card and go somewhere else. Or on that loan, I need a 2.5% interest rate on that car. Because I might just take my business somewhere else. I might go to the credit union. See, these are all the things we want to get into as we elevate people's consumer purchasing buying power, and that's the name of the game. When you don't have money, you don't have credit, you don't have a means, then everything is going to look like you have a pair of shades on, and those pair of shades are going to have you looking into darkness every day. So if we can give you the laws to deal with the debt collectors, then we're going to give you the laws to be able to clean your credit report and get some of that erroneous information out to increase your purchasing power. Now things feel a little bit better, because everybody feels all is lost. I can't buy credit. I can't get a good job. Again, they base employment on your credit report. We don't understand how powerful these agencies are. We will know after tomorrow. But does that answer your question, sister?
No, it does, because I was asking for my parents, and they've always done very well and that type of thing. But they, you know, they're not in the mold of what you're talking about, of where things have already gone awry. So I'm looking for a way for them to be able to, with their good credit and everything else, was there a way? And you explained it, and I appreciate that. So for them to go in and look at, okay, this is how good our credit is, for them to go, be able to negotiate. I know they don't know that they have that power. I know they know that. So for me, that was perfect, because I can go and tell them, okay, when you pull up your credit report next time, you need to make sure you're paying who you're supposed to be paying, and then you need to start negotiating, because y'all credit is amazing. So why are y'all paying?
When you get into the arena that you're in, health, wellness, healthy eating, that's going to be on the back burner if we're economically in a slump. We can't afford to go to Whole Foods. We can't afford to spend a few more dollars on the better food, you know. So we have to deal with these things, and we have to deal with it from an economic standpoint, that if we're able to buy again, if we're able to be educated consumers, not just we've been consumers up to this point. Now, because we're forced into this position, we should be forced in not just reading our Bible, but reading our laws that governs our behavior, and start looking at, okay, well, wait a minute. I might owe $100, but I see you violated, and you may have some violations, of which the liability is $60. So now I just owe you $40. I got $40 here. Take that and go ahead and close me out. You understand? That's what I'm trying to get people in the mindset of doing, and stop following all of these theories about we don't need to participate in commerce. Yes, you do. And the only people that say that are those that don't participate in anything. People tell you you don't need a job. Yes, you do. You need a job or in your own business. People want to tell you it's no money. Yes, it is. And those that tell you that don't have any. Okay, people want to tell you don't participate in this or that. Look, You can participate in it, but you just have to know what the rules are. What are the laws that govern my conduct and behavior? And stop running around the laws, stop running around commerce, and learn how to deal with it, because you're going to be a consumer. I don't care how much money you got. Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, the president, whoever is a consumer. They buy gas, they buy food, they buy clothes, they use money, whatever currency. I don't care if you're using Bitcoin. You're buying something. Do you understand? You're a consumer. So let's stop this confusing rhetoric about something is really not nothing, and, you know, well, they're collecting money from you. Well, credit. They're saying you owe money because you got credit. That's another area you need to learn the difference. If they loan you credit, do you owe them money? We'll get into that this week. What's the difference in credit and money? It's a difference. You didn't loan me money, you loaned me credit. All right, so we're going to explore all those areas, sister. I do appreciate you calling in. I'm going to take this other guy that I told I would get back to. It's good to hear from you. You're always still part of the Thor family. This is Sister Unique. And, in fact, let me just go ahead and let people know, the Ready, Set, Restore that you hear us say all the time, Sister Unique created that. So big props to you for your contributions to one of the slogans that we use here at Thor. You know we love you. We appreciate your input.
Thank you, Ken.
All right. All right, let's go back to 412-1568. You're on Thor Radio. Did you finish mowing your lawn?
No, I'm not a lawnmower shop, but it's cool now. I can talk. I greatly appreciate it. Greatly appreciate it.
Let me ask you a question, man. Yeah. Because you mowing your lawn, did you put gas in that lawnmower?
I'm a consumer. I'm a consumer.
You promise? I just wanted to make sure, man. I thought you might have been in the lab in your basement making your own gasoline.
No, it's a real hard concept, the public and private, and trying to stay private. It's just a hard concept because everybody has a Federal Reserve nurse in their pocket, you know, and it's really a hard concept to be able to understand. And that's why I really like what you do, because you use your own laws and statutes to beat them. And like I said, I always admire that. And then, like, everybody doing this private stuff, they end up in jail a couple times, you know. It's like when you try to overthrow the system, the way the system's working, you're going to create some enemies that you don't really need.
That's right. Well, you know, there is a public and private. I just think that word is abused. I think it's so conflicting and so confusing that the average person, like you hear Ron or anybody else on this call, and then you hear some of the people that promote this type of lifestyle, they don't live that lifestyle, okay? And they will often tell you they don't live the lifestyle. So what are we talking about? I mean, what are we leading our people to when we talk about that? Is there a public? I will be the first one to say yes. But if I was in that particular arena, I wouldn't be on Blog Talk Radio. I wouldn't have money in my pocket. I wouldn't use driver's license, commercial airlines, PayPal, or anything else. That is a lifestyle. And it's a lifestyle for the few, okay? So if we don't know of how to put people in this particular function, and we don't know how to do it right now or soon, then let's just move on, man, and do something that is effective, something that will put money in people's pocket or keep money in their pocket. And I don't think anything out there private does that. And I haven't seen too many people that really live that life to be able to tell you about it. And that's my opinion. That's my position on it. And I always have a right to render that opinion. And I'm glad you understand it. A lot of things sound good. Again, distractions. We have poverty. We have death. We have suicide. We have divorce. That all are residual factors of debt. We have to be serious. Deal with this, take it serious, stop the nonsense, and let's get on a path back to economic stability. So go ahead, brother, what you got?
I have my question. I'm going to explain that real quick. The most private people that I've ever seen, ever, is the Amish.
That's right.
And they're getting away from
that. Now you hit that right on the head. Now, that, if I think of any private group, it would definitely be the Amish people. For sure. That was a good example.
You know, I seen the Amish yet this weekend on a bus eating at Golden Corral. So even they're starting to, you know, deal with the English. That's what they call you. You get in the commerce, they call it the English. But that's the most private that I've seen. And
yes.
I don't
yes.
think you're private if you got yourself a Maybach. You know, you got yourself a couple mansions.
I don't think you're private if you're getting on Spirit or Delta Airlines either. I'm thinking if you're private, you might have your own private jet. I'm not thinking you're going to be on Blog Talk either or any other radio station talking about it. It seems to be some, you know, a secret society, and I would know about secret societies, but you know, even within those, I don't think there are some private people in there. So, you know, again, it's something that we can talk about for 20, 30, 50 years and not really understand. Do we have that time? People are dying. People are being forced into poverty. You hear this man, he's a minister. He's a leader. He's a trailblazer. He's a navigator. He navigates his congregation, and he's under the pressure to where, you know, it's hitting our leaders that are leading our followers, and he's being hit in his heart, in his church, in his marriage. This is serious. And if anybody out there can go into some different realm where they can be more comfortable, I'm sure I would be there, probably before a lot of the people you hear talking about it. I would be there, and I'd probably be one to get kicked out too because I'll be bringing everybody in.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this. What I wanted to ask was this. I think most of these cases, whether it's certainly in these foreclosures, I think our remedy, I think would be in these motions to dismiss or strike hearings. And sometimes, you know, from your experience, if you have a bona fide motion to dismiss, and the judge just basically said, motion denied, no explanation. What exactly is the process that you do before you go to an interlocutory? Because you might have a bona fide case, but, you know, the appellate court, you know, are going to basically, you know, abide by the law. But a lot of times it seems like these lower courts, they just deny your motion. I think a lot of us are going to get stuck when they say if you file a motion to dismiss for the fact that the assignment isn't correct, because that's what the instrument they're going to use to put you out your house. They said a mortgage assignment, you know, and from the originator to, you know, when it goes from start from the originator and it ends up with the trustee, you didn't miss A, B, and C. You missed the depositor and the sponsor, and they made it up in their own office.
You just want to do a motion for findings of facts and conclusions of law. You know, many times these judges will arbitrarily just say no or denied with no explanation. So you go back and you want to findings of facts and conclusions of law. I want you to, sir, respectfully tell me decision with law on why you denied my motion before the court. So you can preserve your position on appeal. If you show me the finding of fact, conclusion, law, you show me how you arrived at that decision, I might not appeal it. So I need you to explain to me how you came to that conclusion. Don't just tell me no. I'm a pro se litigant or not. I need you to explain to me. Attorneys will do it. I need findings of fact, conclusion, law, how you said no. Because I clearly feel I'm within my right, pursuant to the rules, to move for that sort of dispositive motion. So you want to find these facts, conclusion, law, on how you arrived to that. Then, if you're not satisfied with that, or you feel like, you know, that was out of scope of his authority, then you can sometimes, some courts, depending on your local rules, sometimes you have to get permission to do an interlocutory appeal. Sometimes you can just file it and don't get permission. It all depends on whether you're in the federal court or you're in the state court. It all depends. But, you know, for the most part, I'm going to tell you this, and I just read you an article if you were here in the beginning of the show. many times these judges will sometimes just rubber stamp the foreclosure. If you don't really hit them hard on some procedural motions, you have to say, look, they lack standing. You have to attack their standing, their capacity. You have to use the document and the inadmissible or admissible evidence, depending on what it is, that they've put into that court within the complaint, and you have to just beat the nonsense out of them with it. Now, more than likely, I'm just telling you, they're going to make you ride up that tree to the very top, meaning they may deny your motion, you're going to play that game, you're going to go to appeal, but what's going to really get you some traction, in my experience, is when you start filing your offensive complaints, lawsuits against them for what they've started to do. As soon as they start that foreclosure, you start your district court action against them. Okay? You want to get their attention. You know if you go in there. In some courts, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm going to tell you, New York, you're not even fighting the banks. You're fighting the court. The judges will answer for the plaintiffs and all kind of nonsense. And you just want to keep riding on up the chain until you get to appeal and just tie it up there, but be filing your offensive lawsuit against them for what they're doing. But definitely you have to defend the foreclosure action. You just can't leave it alone. You have to defend it. I mean, you have to, okay? But you're not going to get their attention until you start having the potential to cost them money and damages pursuant to the consumer protection laws.
So you're basically saying when you do your motion to dismiss, if they deny, so you want to fact and finding and law, you basically want an excuse as to how you came to that conclusion. And if you don't like that, that's when you would do an interlocutory until the next higher court can make a decision on a fact of law for you.
I mean, you can, but this is what I'm saying to you, brother. That foreclosure process is full of holes. You can take the back road, the side road, you can take the main highway, you can do the dirt roads. I mean, you can go a bunch of different places and interlocutory appeals and all that. You know, yeah, I mean, you can ride that train, but I'm going to tell you right now, you need to just go on. You just go ahead and in the back of your mind, strategize that they may be successful over here, no matter what I say. They may try to be, okay? And you build up your case against them to where if they are successful, it's just going to cost them way too much, okay? So they're going to abandon that road or come together with you at some early point and say, let's try to work something out. And that's not beyond you. Now, whatever working something out is to you, if you're satisfied with it, that's what you should deal with. If it's a modification, so be it. If you don't want to pay snake up the tree, then go ahead and do it. Long as you're happy about it. Long as you can look at the long-term effect of that obligation and live with the fact that you're going to pay somebody that you're comfortable with paying, it's your decision. That's really what they want anyway. Okay? They really want you to work something out with them. Okay, and you can do that. Or if you have the opportunity and their actions are so egregious and it's so obvious that they're really not who is owed, then you need to ride it all the way up the offensive ladder, not the defensive ladder. Okay? You'll get some cases dismissed. I mean, I've had people do it just with my webinars. Plenty of people get their foreclosures dismissed. It all depends. And that's just defense. Just them saying the word debt collector, just them using that terminology. They've had them dismissed all the time. But, you know, again, that's defense. What are you going to cost them? All right? So, you know, you have to look at that. But, you know, interlocutory appeals and whatnot are a little bit too fancy for unsophisticated and least sophisticated consumers. You know, again, you can go with it. Yeah, you're going to have to appeal or you're going to have to do something that's going to get their attention and make them stop what they're doing and ask you to stop what you're doing to have an opportunity to meaningfully meet and try to see if you guys can mitigate in some way. And that mitigation should benefit you, not them, knowing that you know they have either no skin or very little skin in the game.
Okay.
Okay, brother. Thank you for sorting us, man. Keep coming back. We appreciate you. All right. All right, 239. I have no more callers in the queue. I'm going to let my illustrious panel, unless somebody else wants to press star one and get a question answered or comment or concern, I'm going to let my panel kind of close out. I appreciate everybody from calling. Wait a minute, I got the brother student here. Let him see if he has anything for us. Brother Maynard, 516-5545. Door students in the house.
Three.
Please, brother.
I didn't know I was on.
You know I recognize the Transformers when they interview. The Thor Transformers. If you're going to be any mothership, you got to have jets, F-16s, F-18 battleships. If they take the mothership down, look, you got to still got to deal with the other Transformers.
That's right.
What's going on, brother? What's happening? Anything new? Anything happening?
Oh, there's always stuff happening, you know. There's always stuff happening. I mean, we're just, you know, overwhelmed with joy and actually just satisfaction of the results that we're obtaining. And you know, I'm just sitting back here enjoying the show and all the callers and you know, the panel. It's just a beautiful show, a beautiful thing that you're doing, and I'm just loving it, man. I'm loving every moment of it. Everything you're doing, I'm just loving it, man. I'm enjoying it. So yeah, I was just sitting back and just taking my notes, and you have a plethora of information today, and you know.
Yeah, I kind of jumped around. My panel kind of asked me to jump around a little bit. And, you know, show my diversity on different topics and try to just reach out there and see what the people want to talk about. But it all still centers around debt because we've demonstrated how it affects the health, how it affects our mentality, our spirituality, our religion, our stability. I mean, I don't know what else to talk about whose branches reach into that many dimensions of our lives. So I'm going to still stay here. I'm not going to get off because if we can get back up to, you know, economic stability, then, you know, when everybody has a pocket full of money, everybody's peaceful. Whole Foods might get crowded because we can go in there and buy some organic food and, you know, we can start doing these things that we want to do when we have some money or when we beat a debt collector out of paying them some money that they weren't due, then that's increase in our household, and if we can just bring this money issue up, then, you know, everything will look a lot better. You know, we'll be more empowered. You know, it'll help everybody, even the legal society. You know, the legal society, their biggest clients are the banks. So that's why certain things that I feel personally that they will not do, because the banks are their biggest clients. Why? We don't have any money as a collective. Not right now. We're in the hole. So who's paying? Who's printing money? I keep telling y'all. Y'all keep thinking y'all gonna hurt these people. You can't hurt these people. They print money. They print money. Stop complaining. Go get some of that money. If they run out, they'll go print some more. So we have a building, an entity called the Federal Reserve or whatever you want to call it, and they print money that can be used for you to pick up your family. And I'm telling you all these damages that they levy upon you with debt collection, and you're not putting the pressure on them. You're not making those printing presses be going enough. Come on now. Come on. We're not. It's not like Walmart. We tell everybody in the town to go to that Walmart and clean them out to where they're never going to be able to restock. The banks are always going to be able to restock, okay? And the debt collectors are continue to make errors and continue to leave money on the table for you to go get. And they're daring you to go get it.
Wow.
So I don't understand how are we not focused on this area. I don't know how this area causes any conflict or confusion or disparity with talking about money. Talking about money.
We're talking about economics, mm-hmm. civics, and how it turns into any dysfunction is beyond me. But, you know, it's always going to be, you know. It's always going to be. We're standing in line for the new Jordan sneakers. We're standing there 2 days before to spend $500.
I just want to make one more. I just want to make one more comment, and that regarding Thor and what you have done, you are affecting. You're making quite an effect through my group and through the other groups and through all the people. It's a ripple effect of families, of children. It could be well into the thousands of people. And families and extended families that through Thor and the knowledge that you have brought, the amount of people that you have affected is well into the thousands by now, and it really is commendable and just a rich, rewarding feeling that I'm getting from this, and the people are being blessed by it. So I just want you to know that you're really having an effect. And
great.
You know, we're just appreciative of everything.
I know you are, brother, and I thank y'all. And trust me, I get a lot of emails on that type of subject matter, and I don't take it to head. It really motivates me, and you've been one of my students out there, and I'm telling you, I just, you know, I get tickled every time I talk to you because, I mean, you just sound happy. I know you get the phone calls, too. Thank you, Maynard. You saved this money over here.
Yes.
You got off of me. You kept my family together because, Maynard, you and I know as men, when the men cannot provide for their household anymore, or when we're losing it and the women just feel like they don't know when they're going to come home and be out on the street, there's nothing like that pressure. That pressure will cause us to eat, cause us to consider drugs when we never did it. It'll cause us to consider prostitution when we never – I mean, we're looking for all kind of things. Cause us to stop going to church, stop believing in God, stop believing in anybody. This thing is serious.
Yep.
And then it affects the women. It affects the children. The children are paranoid. You understand?
Oh, yes.
So, you know, this is a family.
They have stress. The children, when I hear children having stress, I'm like,
yes.
Are you kidding me? You know, their grades are failing and because the parents are under pressure.
That's right.
And to be able to help them and then come back and tell you that, you know, thank you for what you've done. It's just, there's no greater reward.
That's right. And what did you do? You stopped a debt collector that paid a nickel and tried to take a dollar from you. Okay? They paid a nickel and tried to take a dollar from you. And the only thing you can get with a dollar these days is a Happy Meal or some garbage food, which Unique will tell you that's what a lot of these kids are eating. They're eating Burger King, McDonald's, and Wendy's for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Why? Because a debt collector somewhere down the line or their credit report somewhere down the line, mother has to get to work, their father has to get to work, they're paying high insurance because they have bad credit. They're paying high card payments because they have bad credit. Y'all don't understand this? Like, and we're arguing and we're beefing and we're having discord over nonsense, and you don't know how big this thing is because you don't have my vision and you don't see things and you haven't dealt with it and you're not experienced like I am. I see what it causes in every facet of our life. This is serious. It's stopping kids from eating. It's forcing you on welfare, Section 8, forcing you on these government programs. Now they had to take over. What? What? The medical field, Obamacare. Oh, why? Why? You can't afford to get insurance anymore, right? So the government has to give you insurance now. Why? Because you're eating, you're stressed. It's cheaper to buy the fast food and quicker because your gas and electric is too high. Okay, and if you got bad credit, you know they ask for an extra deposit, okay? So, you know, here it is. That's other money going out the window because your credit is bad. Do you understand how significant? I know you do, Maynard. This credit issue is serious. This consumer protection situation is serious. Serious, brother.
It's life and death.
That's right. Well, thank you, brother. You know we love you. Keep doing what you're doing, man. We're going to get to New York and bless your group with some more information. We have a webinar we'll be announcing this on tomorrow, and I'll be talking to you about, and others, everyone, about the significance of Equifax TransUnion and Experian. And I think I'm going to open up your mind a little bit more as to who runs things in this country, who owns these mm-hmm. entities, who are behind them. Okay, as I told you, there's always a battleship and some fighter jets. The fighter jets swoop down. They do all the war. They're the ones that steal your debt. They're the ones that use the court system. Those are the battleships. But then those are the fighter jets. But then there's the mothership, the people who mm-hmm. really own these companies, these parent companies. You will be surprised mm-hmm. when you really are dealing with somebody that deals with this, you will understand the type of information you get in litigation and find out how to pull the curtain open and find out who's behind these things. And once you start pulling that curtain, is when you start signing some pretty good settlement contracts and agree to be quiet about the motherships. But if you haven't gotten that far,
looking forward to it, man.
That's right, brother. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Peace and blessings,
thank
man.
Thank you.
And keep Peace doing and what you're doing, man.
Love you, brother.
Love you, brother.
Okay.
Love you, man. All right. All right. We're 2:50. We got a few minutes left. I'm going to let my great panel of sisters and mothers have their parting and final words until tomorrow. Layla, Lori, Rudy, y'all can go, whichever
okay,
one of you jump
can
first.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yes, ma'am.
Okay, fantastic. Then I shall be first. In closing, I simply want to say, obviously, it's been an extra call from what I was able to hear. I can't wait to hear the recording so I can get. But because of the nature of this.
Right, Mother, you're breaking up a little bit. I want you to start all over.
Information being shell of paper. Okay, can you hear me now? Here we go.
Okay, stay right there and then go.
Hold your leg out.
Okay. I said in closing, I just want to say, obviously, I've enjoyed what I've heard, but I can't wait to hear the recording. Because of the nature of this call and the information being shared, the elevation with education, I challenge each person to bring someone to the next call. Each one should reach one for change, because change is necessary for total survival. Thank you, and have a great day.
All right, thank you, Mother. Before y'all go next, Mother, you remember back in the days when we had the old TVs and we had to take the hanger and break the iron hanger and stick it in the antenna and put the aluminum foil on top of it? You got to do that to that back phone you got, Mother. You got to keep still when you're talking so we can hear you.
Gotcha.
I remember those days, Mother. You remember the hanger days with the aluminum foil?
Oh, yes, I do.
That brought it back. That's equivalent to HDTV today. That was our version of HDTV when we stuck the antenna in the little thing when the antenna broke. All right, Sister
okay,
Lori or Layla.
Hello. Yeah, Rudy, that just cracks me up every time. It's so funny. Today was a beautiful call. That was just great. Everybody all getting in it. And I just want to say thank you to Ron calling in and being a true witness for others and for the men out there that are listening. You know, it's okay. It is a little frightening at times. And, you know, maybe you need to bring up conversations in your circle of influence that you run in, whether it be at work or your friends or your church. And because, like Rudy was saying, if you just reach out to someone, or even if you're talking in just general, you never know who someone, you know, if someone's in, I don't know, either a financial crisis that is causing them to contemplate things that they shouldn't, if they would just give it one more second, one more day, one more hour, they'll come to the realization that it's all going to be okay. And but anyway, I just want to thank Ron for coming up tonight or this afternoon and, you know, telling his story. That's just beautiful. But next, I would like to remind everyone, when you're studying your FDCPA violations that these guys are doing, If you will look at, when you study your SCRA in combination with your FDCPA, look at 1692G with them not being able to or not sending you notice that they've contacted you on your credit reports, what I'm trying to say. When they pull your credit report, that's their first contact with you, and they're supposed to be sending something
within
to you
five
within
days.
5 days of
so
that.
So your letter within 5 days, that's right.
That's right. And that violates your – whenever they are doing their pulling your credit report, that's violating your 1681BF. And those two
that's
in combination, like Brother Sharif was saying earlier, all you need is one, and then it is boom, boom, out go the lights. So
right.
That's an FCRA combined with an FDCPA.
Right.
That's all
we're
I got.
Gonna get into, we're going to get into your combination punching. Right now we're trying to teach you how to throw – left and right, and then once you get the fundamentals of throwing a left and a right, we're going to teach you how to throw combinations in tandem with the FCRA, FDCPA, TCPA, along with your state consumer protection law. So that was a good point, Lori, and thank you for that, and thank you for being here as well. Layla, we got one and a half minutes. Give me your closing parting words, if you would.
I agree. This is a beautiful call. Take up the challenge, just like Sister Rudy said, and bring somebody here. While we were on the call, I took a call from someone encountering some difficulty. So reach out to the people that you know, because everyone is having a challenge with their debt issue. So let them know. Have them email debtshow@yahoo.com so they can start receiving the information that is coming down to all of us so we can continue to be educated. Peace and blessings, everyone. I love you.
Love you, too. Much love, and I have a deep love and affection for my team, Lori, Layla, Rudy, the mother, Mayama, the father that is on here, and a deep love and affection for everybody that's out there. Again, I want to make a special request of you to check on your elderly. Summer months, some of them, maybe because of debt collectors, don't have air conditioning units, don't have electricity on. They're probably getting knocks on the door by debt collectors. Check on your elderly. Check on your parents, your matriarchs, your mothers and fathers of civilization. Make sure they're okay. They can't read. They probably don't have the vision to read. They probably don't have the ability to read. You should read for them. You should send letters to these debt collectors on their behalf. You should save them any kind of stress and oppression that they may experience, similar to what you're experiencing. Get together with your religious groups and put together a team and study group and start studying the laws that governs your behavior in commerce. We want to do this because this is how we're going to build and rebuild, ready, restore, and reset our communities. We have to do it economically. We have to do it collectively, all race, all political affiliations. We have to come together. I want to wish all of you a great week. We will see you again here tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thor Radio Network. Peace and blessings.